much about.
Welcome to the Battle Royale, right here, right now. Operation Soaring Falcon is in its final stages.
It's time to settle this.
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy!
4, 5, 6.
V.I.G.
Should pot be legal?
I think pot should be legal for medicinal purposes and entertainment purposes, but that's it. Anything outside of that is just, I think, crazy and not a good reason to legalize it.
What number Chick-fil-A grand opening this is for you?
This is number 68.
Would you be willing, if it came down to it, to give me your wristband?
Butchered English alert, butchered English alert, butchered English alert, butchered English alert.
And now. These are hoodies. These are the same guys.
Our feature presentation.
I was thinking as I was putting that together last night that Beer Mug is increasingly sounding like the man without a face. It's getting harder and harder to tell those two apart when they do interviews and talk and sing.
Well, thank you.
Hey, party people, welcome on into yet another all-new Kevin and Bean show. I know you're as shocked as we are that we've come back for yet more entertainment, quote-unquote. But here we are on a Tuesday now. Mm-hmm. How's everybody?
Good.
Mugs?
My week is just getting worse.
It's only Tuesday.
It.
Yeah, I know.
I don't care.
It's dumb.
I was just being polite. Lisa, how are you, Lisa?
I'm fine, Dean. Thank you.
Hey, it is the most wonderful time of the year. As you know, we were just talking about the Miss Double December pageant up and running. You can enter right now at KROQ.com or KevinandBean.com if you want to be Miss Double December 2012. You've got a little less than 2 weeks now to send in your questionnaire and your photos. But it's also the most wonderful time of the year for other reasons, too. The Victoria's Secret special on CBS is coming up at the end of this month.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Adriana Lima, who's one of the best Victoria's Secret models,
did
an interview with the Telegraph newspaper in Britain that I thought was fascinating because, you look at that show and you go, how is that real? How do they look like that, right?
Yeah.
And she's kind of pulling back the curtain a little bit on what goes into preparing for a Victoria's Secret television special, which I thought was fascinating.
I would like to hear this because they're not being airbrushed.
No, they're not. You're looking at them live on the TV in high definition.
Yeah.
Adriana Lima is 30 years old. She's one of the most successful of the Victoria's Secret models. And, of course, there's a lot of working out involved. Starting about 2 months out, she starts working out specifically with the special in mind in the parts of her body that are going to be seen, which is most of them.
Yeah.
When it gets to a month out, she starts doing double the workouts. And, of course, she's got a team. She's not guessing. She's probably got 20 people on her team to mold her into the way she looks, right?
And this is her job now.
And this is her job, yeah. This is what's fascinating to me. She has a nutritionist who measures her muscle mass, fat ratio, and levels of water retention. He puts her on protein shakes, vitamins, and supplements to keep her strong. She drinks a gallon of water a day.
Mm.
By the way, how sick of water would you be? At a gallon.
You'd be in the bathroom all the time.
For 9 days leading up to the show, she drinks only protein shakes with powdered egg white. No solid food.
Okay, now it's all making sense. They're cutting down like you do when you are in a muscle competition.
Yeah, that's right.
Muscle posing competition.
She stops drinking a gallon of water 2 days before the show and drinks normally. 12 hours before the show, she stops drinking all liquids completely.
So she has absolutely no retention of water.
Exactly, yeah.
Wow, this is brutal. I have so much more admiration for them. I mean, they're working out like professional athletes.
Who knew it was so difficult, right?
It's like the Olympics, for God's sakes.
For 9 days, though, no solid food? Isn't that insane?
That's brutal.
I would not have guessed that, by the way. She says that the Victoria's Secret show is the highlight of her life, which I'm sure makes her husband and daughter feel good. Becoming an angel, once I achieved that, it was a dream come true for me. And I know that after all this is done, when I sit down with my daughter one day, we are going to look back and it is going to be very special. The show is going to be on November the 29th, by the way. And they're all going to be on there. Alessandra Ambrosio, Miranda Kerr, Candace Swanepoel. They're all going to be there.
I bet there's a couple of them that just drink Diet Coke and smoke right up until they get on stage and don't have to do any of that stuff.
You're probably right. Yeah.
There's always a few.
there are some who just have the right metabolism, I guess, for this job. But I was just, I was, as you were, Lisa, I think I was just a little bit surprised to see how much they put into it.
Yeah, I had no idea. I thought you were going to tell me about how they, like, sculpt them with makeup to make them look a little better, you know, like put in some
shadows and stuff. Yeah,
exactly.
Doesn't say so, though. Giselle Bundchen, by the way, who I guess is a former Victoria's Secret model, used to make $7,000 an hour for Victoria's Secret.
Oh, just posing for the magazine?
Or $7,000 an hour is what she got paid to be a Victoria's Secret angel.
What did they get paid for the show?
I don't know. I mean, you know, some of these girls do make millions of dollars a year, so I'm sure that that's a chunk of it. That's for sure.
Damn.
But anyway, you see that, and you have two thoughts when you read an article like this. You're like, why would any woman do this? And then, why doesn't every woman do this? Is the other thought.
No, that's your other thought. Wow. That was not my other thought.
That's right. You're right. You're probably right about that. All right, let's look ahead. We got a great Kevin DeBean show for you today.
It's a travesty of a mockery of a sham, of a mockery of a travesty of two mockeries of a sham.
Actually, no. It's actually a real Kevin DeBean show today that you're going to want to stick around for. All Ask right. a transsexual on Woo! The program, ladies and gentlemen. How about that?
That will be fascinating.
We will be very respectful of listener Megan, who is a pre-op transsexual. She is going from she's living as a woman, but she still has manly parts. Mm-hmm. And she wrote a very touching email yesterday talking about how, look, lots of us would like to have the surgery. It's not covered by insurance. It's very expensive. And you can imagine how difficult it is navigating the dating world, you know, being half man, half woman, essentially.
Sure.
So I'm fascinated to find out a little insight into Megan's life. I think we'll all learn a little something. So that'll be coming up on today's Kevin DeBean Show. Also, one of our favorite actors from The New Girl, that hit show with Zooey Deschanel, Max Greenfield, is going to be on today. He is Schmidt on that program.
He's great.
Adam Sessler is going to be here talking about the new Call of Duty and so much more in the world of video games. We are getting into that time of year again where all the big Christmas releases are coming out. We got more tickets for you for the red carpet world premiere of the Twilight movie, Twilight Saga. Breaking Dawn Part 1, you get a chance to see it next Monday. The rest of the world has to wait until the following Friday. So we got those for you on the show today. That's a hot, hot ticket. The Wheelo Bad Animal Voice is on the program today.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent a little bit of time with Dr. Drew's Life Changers yesterday.
Tell me.
The freak show that is Dr. Drew's Life Changers. We got to get an extraction team in there. We got to figure out some way to get the Navy SEALs on it and pull him out of there and bring him back to reality.
Look where he is now. This show's been on like a month. Where is he going to be in a month?
Yes, that's an excellent point. Well, yesterday he had the beautiful teenager Courtney Stoddard, Stodden, I guess is her name, on the program yesterday, that freak show who married the 51-year-old.
Yes.
And she's every bit as wacky as you would anticipate. And the purpose of the show was to have a plastic surgeon look her over in front of a live studio audience to determine once and for all if she's had any surgeries at all.
And whose life is that going to change?
Well, exactly. I don't know. I guess hers, because now she won't have people accusing her of getting breast implants as a teenager, I guess.
Well, thank God that's over.
Because that is the long national nightmare that we've all been surviving. So we're going to have highlights of that for you coming up as well. Also, we'll be talking to TMZ.com about what's likely to happen to Dr. Conrad Murray now that he has been convicted of manslaughter in the death of Michael Jackson. Sentencing is going to be in a couple of weeks. How much time, if any, is he going to get?
Yeah.
I can't remember which one of the late night comedians it was last night. Probably wasn't Leno because it was funny, but they were talking about how he's not going to serve any jail time. He'll just be he'll be on staff, put in charge of lethal injections at the prison. Great job for him. So all of that, plus Ralph's got the showbiz beat, and that gets going right after this on the Kevin DeBean Show. Welcome to the Kevin DeBean Show at 106.7 KROQ for a Tuesday. Ralph,
yeah,
I can't thank you enough for tipping me off to Courtney Stodden and her husband Doug being on the Dr. Drew show yesterday. You're going to love the tape so much.
Oh, I watched.
Oh, you did?
Oh, you saw it. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, I saw episode one. I saw Kate Major in the second half. I saw the upcoming feature for Dr. Drew dressed in a judge's robe for Cheaters Court, where he is the judge of Cheaters Court with two porn stars who are accusing each other of cheating on each other.
What the hell happened?
It's a freaking circus. He's become Jerry Springer. Out of the clown car in the center ring, and my heart was broken yesterday
I
watched.
Yeah.
Did you see the 800-pound women? Did you see them? And their fascinating business where people will pay to follow them around and wait on them.
Yeah. We'll get into that in the next segment. I've got some deep feelings about that show.
Okay. Yeah. Highlights of Dr. Drew and Courtney Stodden coming up here on the Kevin and Bean Show. And don't forget your chance for Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 1 tickets later this morning as well. Right now, Ralph's got the showbiz beat. What's going on?
While we're talking about tickets, on November the 17th, that is next Thursday, a gentleman named Kevin Ryder and myself,
who used to be on the show?
Yeah.
Oh, I remember him.
He will be co-hosting along with me at the San Manuel Indian Bingo and Casino. We're having our K-Rock 10K Poker Play, which is a poker tournament that costs nothing to get into. Mm. You just got to sign up and become a member of the San Manuel Club there. It doesn't cost anything. You sign up and you could win. The winner of the tournament will win $10,000.
Yeah! Pretty worth it.
It's a pretty good investment.
Yeah.
No money for $10,000. You can go to krock.com right now if you'd like to sign up for your spot to play. However, Kevin and I will each be hosting at a table at the tournament. I don't forget how many tables they start with, but Kevin and I will each be sitting at one. If you'd like to play alongside me and have a shot at knocking me out of the tournament, although don't get your hopes up, because I am awesome! Call right now, 1-800-520-1067. Call right now. And I will give you a pair of passes so you can bring a friend and you will sit at my table and we'll play on Thursday, November the 17th at San Manuel Indian Bingo and Casino. Should be fun. Later on the week, I'll be giving away tickets for Kevin's table, too, just so he doesn't get all butthurt about it and feel like I'm not including him in the party. But I figured I'd wait for him to come back. If he comes back, I don't know.
No,
he might be on a leave. I don't know. I don't know anymore what's going on in this joint. I just don't.
I think he is planning on returning perhaps as early as tomorrow.
All right. Let's talk about showbiz news. Not really showbiz news, but I would be remiss if I didn't give a brief mention to one of my boyhood heroes. The champ, Smokin' Joe Frazier, has passed away at the age of 67 years old after a brief fight with liver cancer. He passed away last night, and he was a big deal not only in the world of boxing, but certainly in the world of my hometown, Philadelphia, where he made his home. And he, of course, legendarily fought Muhammad Ali and George Foreman back when boxing was king and heavyweights were heavyweights.
Yeah, he did. I mean, he electrified the sport with how great that matchup was with him and Ali. That's for sure. I mean, those were three of the most, probably most popular fights that have ever been fought between any of them.
Each one an epic battle. I mean, the guys were just killing each other in there. Just amazing. Anyway, he will be missed. And I was sad when I heard the news last night.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
It's porn star Kim Kardashian in the news. She left Hollywood for Minnesota last weekend, and everyone was speculating, oh, is there a reconciliation to be had? Because that's where Chris Humphries lives. That's his hometown. But no, in fact, New York Post is reporting that she flew back to apologize to Chris Humphries' family. Well, it's a little late, isn't it, porn star Kim Kardashian? Sources say that she is deeply embarrassed and sad about the breakup of their marriage, but there are no plans to reconcile, so don't get your hopes up, anybody who wants that to happen.
Again.
Which I can't imagine is anyone. Pam Anderson, name that's been out of the news for a while. She's back, taking up the plight of horses in New York City. There's a lot of celebrities who are behind this particular campaign. They're looking for a ban for horse-drawn carriages that you see in the Big Apple. You see them up and down Broadway there in Times Square and around the parks where they try to give tourists an interesting tour of the city by taking them in these horse-drawn carriages. And Pam Anderson, who is a longtime animal lover, believes that the horses don't belong in the congested urban setting of New York, where they're forced to breathe exhaust and share space with cars, buses, and taxis. And so she was out there supporting that cause this week. She also said they have a particular quality, the horses do, that she's enormously drawn to. So kind of just one aspect of the horse that she particularly likes.
No way. Uh-oh, sausage.
Just saying, she was dating Tommy Lee.
Yeah. So
they had a lot in common. Michael Lowen! As we mentioned on Dr. Drew's Life Changers yesterday, his ex-girlfriend Kate Major dropped by to show that she's crazy.
Dude, that was I saw the first half of that is all I could take.
Oh,
but
dude,
I mean,
you
that
missed
was
out.
Rough.
Did you
I
see?
Saw the part where she claims that Michael Owen handcuffed her to the bed and raped her.
Yeah,
I mean, that was enough for me.
Yeah. Did you see the part where she broke down in tears because she speculated she might be pregnant with his child?
No.
And then
no.
said later in the episode, oh, but I'm not pregnant or anything. With it, like, it's just a clear eye and a straight face. I mean, she is psychotic.
Wow.
Did you see when they brought the mistress out?
Nope.
Oh,
what
they brought
mistress?
He's got another girlfriend, apparently, that he was sleeping with while he was sleeping with Kate Major.
How is Dr. Drew Jerry Springer? How did this happen?
And the two mistresses face off against each other on the couch.
Oh, my God.
It was an effing train wreck.
Oh, my God.
But Kate, you know, was saying all these horrible things about Michael Owen, which may or may not be true. I have no idea. But it looks like she's got some violence issues of her own. She got into a brawl at LAX last Sunday night. She was on a plane, seated in first class, exchanged words with another passenger, and then started taking swings. Came to blows. No word on whether she was drunk or not. She did say that she had a drinking problem. And Drew was like, well, I can get you treatment. She's like, I'm not here to talk about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she was removed from the aircraft. Police arrived on the scene, and she was issued a citation for misdemeanor battery. Ironically, she was on her way to Florida to attend a court proceeding regarding restraining order she has against Michael. So maybe these two should just be put in the octagon. See who comes out. Like they did with celebrity boxing this weekend. Did anybody get the pay-per-view?
No.
What? That happened already?
Yes! You missed out on the bout between Octomom Nadia Sulman and Long Island Lolita Amy Fisher.
I'm sure that was some pretty powerful boxing right there.
You got to see the photos. They wear gloves, and I'm not kidding you. The gloves are the size of couch pillows.
Like no one could possibly get hurt.
They're like novelty that. Boxing gloves.
Yeah.
And I'm not kidding. It looks like something you'd win at the state fair for knocking over bottles with a softball. It's got to be a foot and a half wide. And they just slipped on these giant powder puff boxing gloves. And even with those gloves, Octomom defeated Fisher in 3 rounds. Got the decision. Congratulations, Nadia. I'm waiting for the rematch, which I'm sure will be on Life Changers. Freaking Drew, come on. Today's celebrity birthdays, Bonnie Raitt, legendary singer-songwriter. She's the real deal right there, that Bonnie Raitt.
Yeah, she's real talented.
She is 62 years old today. Singer-actor Leif Garrett, not so much the real deal. He is 50 years old today. He likes real heroin, don't get me wrong. TV chef Gordon Ramsay. I know you guys don't watch the Gordon Ramsay shows, do you?
He's the guy that screams at everybody, right?
I enjoy them enormously. I love the Hell's Kitchen, and I like Kitchen Nightmares, where he comes in and he fixes up your kitchen and at your restaurant and stuff.
He's got Kitchen F-Word. That's another one of his,
the
right?
The F-Word is another show of his. It's right. About food, yeah. And he did another one where he traveled all over the world looking for original recipes. Like, he wanted to get authentic Vietnamese food, so he goes to Vietnam, and he lives amongst the people and everything. I find him entertaining. 45 years old today. Parker Posey.
Oh, I love her so much.
She's amazing. Just recently, I saw her on The Good Wife. She had a little guest starring role on that. 43 years old today. Gretchen Mol. Oh, come on with the Gretchen Mol now. Of course, from Boardwalk Empire, and she was on Life on Mars. And
she's going to end up doing it with her son on that show.
Yeah,
right? They're heading in that direction.
There's a creepy vibe there that just seems to be coming to a boil. She's 38 years old. Tara Reid, soon to be seen in the upcoming American Pie sequel, American Reunion, is 36 years old. Dania Ramirez from Entourage. 32 years old. Give a little bell for Denny Ramirez there. Yeah. She played Turtle. You don't watch the show, but she played Turtle's girlfriend who introduced him to the tequila company.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
Way hot. Jack Osborne of the Osbournes is 26 years old. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz.
Bush. On the world famous K-Rock, 106.7 KRQ. Yes, Lisa, we never get tired of that. Okay. I know that's what you're thinking. 20 years later, it's still funny. All
right.
How about a pair of one-day Disneyland Resort Park Hopper tickets for both Disneyland and Disney's California Adventure Parks? We've got those for you all this week here on the world-famous K-Rock. Go to krock.com for another chance to win. Ralph, you tipped me off to the greatest half hour of TV I've seen in some time yesterday on the CW network.
Man.
Our friend Dr. Drew is doing a new show that I guess I had dipped in and out of, but hadn't really processed the full scope of the magic that is Life Changers.
I didn't realize either. I thought it was like the HLN show where he just talked about the issues of the day, whatever. And he's a very smart, compassionate dude, and I thought he was helping people out. I had no idea what the show really was until I watched yesterday.
Because the shows I'd seen before, it's like a family comes in and they've got a little girl who's going blind and Dr. Drew hooks them up with, you know, the best surgeon in the world to try to help her vision be restored. I mean, that's the kind of thing I was expecting on the show. But yesterday, he sat down with Doug Hutchison, who's an actor who you might recognize if you saw him. I guess he had a somewhat major role on Lost.
Huge role. He was Horace, the guy who ran the Dharma Initiative the last season or so on Lost.
His biggest movie is probably The Green Mile. And last year sometime, he got hooked up with and married a teenager named Courtney Stodden. So Dr. Drew brings them out last night, or yesterday afternoon on the show.
He's 51, she's 17. They say their love is real, but are her looks?
A knife has never touched this body.
Let's do a complete exam. This will settle this score once and for all.
Life Changers starts now.
I love the orchestra,
Jerry,
by the way.
Jerry! Jerry! Jerry!
And they do get into the plastic surgery because I guess she's gotten a lot of heat. Well, first of all, we should explain what's so annoying about Courtney Stodden. I know you've been fascinated with her for a long time, but she is hard to even look at, right, Ralph?
Yeah, she's a clown. She dresses up like a cartoon slut and then just slathers on, just really cakes on the makeup. And it's 16, 17 years old. She looks like a 40-year-old hooker.
Oh, yes. Dear.
She looks,
yes, she does.
She looks beat and old and weathered.
Oh, my God.
It's tragic.
And she never stops trying to be sexy. She never stops, like, rubbing her husband's leg the whole time that they're on the show. Yeah. And she always is just, like, playing so... Like, she thinks she's playing so cute.
It's like someone doing a really bad Marilyn Monroe impression,
mm-hmm.
where she throws her hair back and everything's very breathy and she touches herself.
Hideous. You don't feel like you're seeing a real person there. So Dr. Drew asked, as he sat them on the couch, he's like, you know, how did you guys meet? Because how did this nightmare happen?
How did you guys meet?
Well, we were communicating at the beginning of this year through email.
Now, I have to warn you that Doug takes an hour to say what should take 30 seconds. Yeah. I did the best I could to edit
everything he talks about. It's like he's giving a dissertation in physics at some university.
I don't know why he thinks his life is so complicated, but let's find out how he met and married a teenager.
And at some point, I got on the phone with Courtney's mom, Krista, to see if we could get Courtney down to Hollywood to take one of my workshops.
Okay, what's your workshop? That about?
No. Yeah.
In other words, I saw a chick I thought was hot and wanted to bang, so I called her mother to see if she would fly her down for sex. That's what's happening here, right?
No, I'm a mediocre actor who only works occasionally, so I augment my income by telling lesser actors, struggling actors, that I will coach them and teach them the ways of Hollywood is what he's doing. And meet hot chicks while he's at it.
Mm-hmm.
But if he saw her on the internet, what did he see on her webpage that made him think she had the ability to be an actress, that he could help her actually become an actress?
I'm guessing she had a checkbook of some sort.
And boobs. Yeah. That's what she had, right?
And I had seen, admittedly, I'd seen Courtney's websites, and I'd seen her music vids, and I'd seen her online.
How old do you think she was?
I thought she was in her late 20s, at least.
All right, he's being kind. Ralph's more accurate with around 40.
By the way, still too young for you, 51-year-old actor Doug Hutchinson. Even if she was in her late 20s, it makes you skeevy.
Good point.
And when you found out she was 16, what'd you think?
Her mom said, well, you know, she's only 16, and I went, huh? What?
What did she think at that point?
She loved it.
She adored it. My mom was so happy that I was going to Hollywood with a 50-year-old.
Mom and Dad were just waiting for a creepy 50-year-old to stalk me on the internet.
All right, we don't have time for all of this, but they go into the courtship, basically. They basically fell in love via email and through the internet, and then he flies to Ocean Shores, Washington, where they live.
Ocean Shores?
Shores. Oh, Ocean Shores, sorry.
I thought that was an STD.
That would be actually more appropriate for Courtney Stodden. So he flies up, and apparently it's love at first sight, and they decide that they're going to get married. Now, Ralph, you're the only father here, okay?
Okay.
Please walk me through what's going on in your head when 51-year-old guy, who's got to be your age or older than you, shows up to date your teenage daughter. How do you let this happen?
You don't. He's not getting off the plane. He's not coming down to Ocean Shores. He is staying wherever he's coming from. Once I even hear this internet relationship exists, I'm putting an end to it.
Yeah, you're grounding your daughter and taking away her wireless, right?
Right?
I mean,
yes.
You're not allowed on the internet if you're going to be flirty with a 51-year-old. You're 16.
Yes, exactly.
Well, they did get married, and they are apparently very much in love. And, of course, they have figured out a way to manage to stay in the headlines. Most recently, when they were asked to leave a Southern California pumpkin patch for provocative photos, and they have an account of what happened there.
Well, one thing about the pumpkin patch fiasco was we were indeed kicked out of the pumpkin patch. We went to pick out pumpkins the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Courtney was dressed, as you saw her, in sort of a Daisy Duke-like thing.
Was she kicked out for the attire?
Kicked out for the attire.
Yeah,
what did they say?
The women were, you know, coming up to the manager and complaining
because of the kids.
Because of the kids. Yeah.
A small handful. Yeah. There were also a lot of people there who were enjoying. They wanted to take pictures with us.
Yeah.
And we even overheard a dad say, "Oh, look," to his little girl. He said, "Oh, look, honey, they have a pumpkin patch girl this year."
The dad loved it.
God, listen to her.
He loved it. Look, honey, there's a pumpkin whore this year. They've got the pumpkin whore.
They're taking pictures because they can't believe what they're seeing and they can't wait to show their friends.
Yeah, if the elephant man showed up in the pumpkin patch, they'd be taking photos of that too, but not because he's a handsome fella. It's because you have your ass hanging out of your jean shirts and you're wearing thigh-high patent leather white go-go boots.
I was so confused by this interview because I know Dr. Drew and have been a fan and a follower of his for so long. And on Loveline, he would have said, hey, who touched you?
Yep.
What
yes.
kind of daddy issues do you yes. have?
What kind of dad do you have?
This is
what kind
was
of dad you have?
Killing me on the show, that he didn't hold anybody accountable for anything they were saying.
And why do you? Why is it so necessary for you to always be the focus of attention and have guys look at you sexually? Why
right.
do you need that 24/7 on your Twitter account, on interviews, in photo shoots?
Yes.
Why is that your entire life? Is how hot guys think you are?
And Doug, what happened to you? Well, how can you possibly reconcile the fact that you feel this attraction and this emotional connection to a teenager? How can you feel emotionally healthy while you're so attracted
right.
to someone who is obviously so below you in terms of life experience and just is it a control thing? I mean, what's going on? All these questions were being screamed out to be asked, and no one was saying anything. It's
yeah.
like
well,
it was, for me, it was like watching Brett Favre play for the Vikings. You know, it's like Dr. Drew has been this amazing, intuitive broadcaster for so many years, and now he's on this show, and he's just basically softballing these losers who needed someone to ask a question.
The toughest he got on the age difference was when he said, look, you can see why people are skeeved out by it.
Do you understand why people are reacting so negatively to your circumstance?
Yes and no. We both knew, and we talked about this when we started.
Just give me your gut. You know why. Come on.
Yes.
16 and 50.
Yes.
It's a little gross.
It's not gross but, to but us.
To it's you, I understand. Our, but do you understand people reacting to it? That's their reaction.
I suppose in the West, in our Western culture, yes.
Oh,
okay.
In our Western culture.
I, of course, being from Siam, have a much more liberal attitude about old creepy dudes marrying
right.
teenage girls.
They took a break, but the hook of Life Changers yesterday is Dr. Drew has a plastic surgeon on staff who is going to examine Courtney Stodden's body and determine whether she's had a breast implant, whether she's had a nose job, an eye lift, Botox, jaw work, whatever it is that they've accused her of.
Live on stage!
Live on stage, right. It really was, it was a freak show. It could
then
have been, it could,
she will
it could
keep
have
broken light bulbs and be walking on a bed of hot coals while laying on a bed of nails.
You are not going to want to miss it. And we'll have highlights of that part of the interview coming up next. Throw the Kevin. You're listening to the world-famous K-Rock at 106.7 KROQ. We'll talk to a best-selling author who says there's too much technology in our lives today and we need to go on a digital diet.
Bean.
I hate this guy.
Bean.
I hate him.
Bean.
It's coming up here on the Kevin.
You need to go
first
on Life Changers. That's where you need to go, Bean. So they can get you off your digital addiction.
Courtney Stodden, that crazy clown-faced teenager who always tries to be sexy, was on yesterday. She's 17 now. Her 51-year-old husband is there. And Dr. Drew wanted to address, really, the question that has been gripping the nation in recent years.
Now, Courtney, what is it precisely that people have claimed you've had done?
My breasts, of course, and, you know, a lot of work on my face for Botox, nose job, cheek implants, chin implants, everything.
And you've had nothing?
Nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
A knife has never touched this body.
Dr. Diaz?
No.
Well, I specialize in making plastic surgery look very natural, so I know all the tricks of how to hide the scars and how to make things look very natural, but if she's had plastic surgery, we're going to find out today.
All right, let's do it.
Finally, someone's getting to the bottom of this while the Occupy New York people starve in the park.
Well, they took a look at her face first and took off some of her hideous eye makeup, and the doctor basically, he had a question about one eyebrow that he thought wasn't quite moving right, but then he determined, no, he doesn't think she's had anything done. He couldn't be 100% sure, but he did not think she'd had anything done to her face. But then Dr. Drew wanted to get right to the ratings grabber.
Let's get on to the part of the body that seems to have created the most attracted the most attention.
I have to say, I'm sure like most people that heard about the story, when I saw some pictures, I did suspect that maybe you did have some breast augmentation.
We should mention for folks who haven't seen Courtney Stodden, for 17 years old, and you can find videos of her going back even further when she was younger, she has enormous boobs, right?
She's built like a brick S house. She really is.
Yeah,
it's a shame she does what she does to her face because she's got a stunning body, which, you know, is great.
And it can't, I mean, it doesn't happen often, but women with her frame can develop breasts like that naturally. Most people assume that she had implants as a teenager, though, because they're so big.
And because of her persona, the way she dresses and the way she acts and everything, she seems like a person who would have them, who would get them done.
Yeah, she seems like the type of person who would start begging for them at age 11 because she hadn't developed fast enough. So that's what they're looking into now.
Mm-hmm. But we have a special instrument here, an ultrasound machine, and we have a great technician that's going to really take a look at this and confirm.
Lisa, come on up here, and what we're going to do is an ultrasound of Courtney's breast that will let us look inside the breast to see if there is anything in there of a foreign body, of like some implant or anything. But this will settle this score once and for all, Courtney. So before we apply the ultrasound, I have a question.
Okay,
Courtney. Is there anything you want to tell us before we put the ultrasound machine on there?
No, nothing. I think my boobs will speak more than I can. Yeah.
And be more entertaining than you can, too.
More intelligent, that's for sure.
Well, let's get right to
Jerry,
it.
Jerry!
What happened when they put her on this sophisticated equipment and they have actual people who have gone to medical school spending their afternoons on the CW looking inside this teenager's boobs?
Dr. Jesus, can you explain what we're looking at here? I see the rib shadow.
There's the normal breast tissue, which is forming the substance of most of the middle of that picture.
Yeah.
And then I can see the outline of her muscle. Yeah. There was something, some circular thing there. I'm not sure, though, if that's...
Uh-oh. Yeah, I see a circular object.
Okay, so they're a little bit confused right now. They are seeing something on the ultrasound that they're not quite sure what it is.
Right there.
Yeah.
Hear the audience?
I can freeze it.
And it looks like it's under the muscle, too. There.
That's right.
Somebody must have drugged me up and put me under their surgery knife because I've had no surgery done.
Courtney, do you have implants?
No, I don't. No. Mm-hmm. Do you have implants, Dr.?
No, but I wouldn't have lumps under my muscle in the pec region.
Well, maybe you would if I'm getting some here.
Mm. Let me look a little further.
Okay, so they look a little further. They go over to the other boob and they squish it around a little bit. And they do shockingly determine that she is all natural and has not had implants. And they think that they were just looking at bone. Yeah. Is basically what happened on that first boob.
So apparently there's a brain in there.
Well, there might be. I doubt there's a brain anywhere in that body. So she is plastic surgery free. That doesn't make her any less repulsive or creepy, though.
Or troubled and in desperate need of extensive therapy.
It does seem like Dr. Drew should have ended the show by bringing out some sort of child services or somebody who could have like taken them away and locked him up.
Forget
and
the plastic surgeon. Therapy. Where's the psychiatrist? That's who you should bring out on stage. And the husband is standing there the whole time when she's got like a sheet over her boobs and they're doing this stuff like it's an act in Vegas. Like he is a magician or something and she's the assistant or he's got a trained dog who jumps through hoops and he's standing there grinning and looking at the audience while his poor wife is going through this sonogram thing that's going on. It was a disgusting display on every level.
It was creepy. It was so creepy. We've lost Dr. Drew. Dr. Drew needs to go on Life Changers.
This show is called Drew Changer because he's not the Dr. Drew I know, man.
All right. How dare you?
Hey!
Well done.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
That's what that song was needing. I always felt that it was a little weak right there at the end, but you came in and saved Dave Grohl once again.
I gotta get Grohl on the phone.
Welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show here on the world-famous K-Rock. Thanks for tuning in. I'm delighted that we can welcome Daniel Seaberg to the show because we bumped him last week, and we could not have felt any worse about it. Daniel, how are you, my friend? Thanks for joining us.
I didn't take it personally at all.
I appreciate that.
I tweeted my apology, Daniel.
Right, and that's funny because, see, Daniel has written a book we want to talk about called The Digital Diet. Now, Ralph, why did you think this book would be an appropriate topic for our show?
Because I think that our society, specifically you, Bean, are addicted to our digital devices to the point, in my opinion, and Daniel may have an opinion on this as well, that it is starting to isolate us as human beings and we're becoming less connected because of it.
Well, I would agree, and I think that it's becoming also a social annoyance for people. You know, it's not just that maybe we're losing our sense of identity sometimes and we have to post everything on Facebook and tweet about it. That, you know, it's just becoming that kind of thing when you go out for dinner with somebody to automatically just dump your phone on the table, which I call a tech turd. At some point, we have to start addressing this and talking about it. And it's not that, and this is not an anti-technology book. I love technology. I've covered technology for many, many years. but I don't want it to get in the way of relationships, and I don't want it to really piss people off.
Yeah, Daniel, I was at dinner recently in Las Vegas with my wife, and I said, look over there. We looked at a table, a family of four, and everyone sitting at that table, I know it sounds like a cliche, was looking down at their phone or mobile device, sitting there in silence at that table.
And it's possible that they were texting each other.
Yes, that is true.
I've encountered families that do that across the table or in the same house. I mean, I've had parents say that they have to text their kids. Now, that could be the sort of 21st century intercom. You know, when I was growing up, we had an intercom in our house to get the kids to come down for dinner.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But when it becomes the primary way of interacting with people, I think that's where it gets to
be. And you know what's hard, too, is I had some girlfriends that came over. It's like a girls' night, and one of them constantly was texting. You know, she'd put her phone down, she'd pick it back up in the middle of this whole thing where we're trying to interact, and it's not even okay for you to say anymore, hey, put that
cut
away.
It
it's really
but it
not
should
cool.
Be okay. It should be okay for you to say that.
It should be, yeah.
And that's what I hope that the book does, is it empowers people to think about these things and have some awareness about it and say, hey, put that down. Didn't we go out for dinner? Why are we physically in the same space together if all you're going to do is look at your screen?
Yeah.
You know, or if you're at a social setting of any kind and you just can't pay attention to what's around you, you know, you're really losing out.
Daniel, what is it you think is more attractive for people about looking at that little screen rather than looking at whatever's around them, whether it's a person or a concert or, you know, some event that they're at? Why do they choose one over the other?
Well, it's a few things. Number one, with your smartphone, you know, you can interact with many, many people all at the same time. You know, you're kind of getting these hits of feedback. People can post on your page, send you an email, send you a text. So it's kind of like, you know, we've become sort of gnats buzzing around looking for this attention from people, and we can get that from our device, whereas if we're in a social setting, maybe it's just one person or two people. You know, it's not as exciting in some ways. And, you know, there are researchers looking at how what we get from technology is in some ways hitting the same parts of the brain as other types of addiction. In other words, we're getting this response from people. We're craving this interaction. We want it. You know, and it's harder to put these devices down even when we know that it's a good idea.
And we can't really do one thing at a time anymore. I mean, haven't you seen that has been what Americans are up to now, is we all multitask all the time?
Including while we're driving, which is a horrible thing to think about. I've talked to parents who lost children because the other driver was texting while driving. And if anybody's listening right now, I encourage you to put down your device, because it's really a serious matter. And we think that we can do more than one thing at a time, including talking on the phone and driving, or texting while driving, or even while we're at work. You know, people have multiple monitors, they're doing all sorts of things. And yes, to a certain degree, that's possible. But to do them well, I think a lot of scientists would say, is a bit of a misnomer, that we're not capable of dividing our brain like that and accomplishing it in a successful way.
And I find that people can't, they're so addicted, they can't even put it aside in order to enjoy another activity. People who are texting during concerts, during movies.
Right, which, you know, I in the book I talk about that, you know, I just wish that people could enjoy those moments, you know. I mean, you can always post about it later if it's on Facebook or Google Plus or Twitter, wherever. You know, there's time to do that sort of thing. But I think that the experiences are being lost. You know, it's becoming such a virtual experience that we're not even there anymore. And, you know, I think that's too bad.
We had an event here at K-Rock a few weeks ago. We had the band Coldplay in to perform live for us on the morning show. And it was a very small crowd, Daniel, that came down to see it, 150 people or so. And as the band was performing 10 feet away from these listeners, virtually all of them were watching it on their cell phones in front of them because they were filming it.
And I thought, probably wanted to be the first one to post it on Facebook.
Of course. Yes.
And to tweet about it.
You're 10 feet away from arguably the biggest rock band in the world, and you're watching on a 2-inch screen, even though they're in the same room. And it just blew my mind to see that.
You know, I mean, it's the world that we live in, and in many ways, you know, I don't want to sound like the sort of older generation. I'm nearly 40. I don't want to sound like I'm wringing my hands and so concerned about these kids coming up, because a lot of them see the behavior from their parents. You know, it's adults these days who can't put their devices down, who can't have a conversation with somebody, who can't socialize, who text while driving. And so, you know, kids see this from their parents as well. So I think it's a lot of people. It's not just those young folks. You know, it's all of us having this experience together, and I just want us to think about it a little bit and maybe take a step back once in a while.
And I think, Daniel, you brought up an excellent point, which is that people need to recognize that this feeling of self-esteem they get from social media, particularly from the Twitter followers and from the post on Facebook, it's not genuine. It's not real. It seems to me to be sort of manufactured, and they're getting addicted to a false sense of self-esteem through it.
Very, very much so, and it falls apart very easily. And this is something that I went through personally. I mean, that was part of the genesis of writing the book, is that I realized that the virtual Daniel Seaberg was getting more attention than the real one. I called it, I sculpted this digital Adonis of myself with all these wonderful pictures and, you know, great status updates, and everybody thought I was having the most amazing life, whereas in reality, a lot of things were troubling me. I had, you know, relationship problems like everybody does. Financial things were going on. You know, I wasn't dealing with those, though. I was too interested and caught up in the virtual space, and I think that becomes a real problem.
Well, it's a fascinating book. Not that I've read it, because I'm going to wait till I can get it on my Kindle so I can read it while I'm on the toilet.
It's available as an ebook, and that is absolutely not a contradiction.
The book is called The Digital Diet, The Four-Step Plan to Break Your Tech Addiction and Regain Balance in Your Life. And I've seen enough of the book to know that Daniel's not saying, here's what you must do. He's just throwing out a bunch of information that you can consider and decide what's best for you and your life and your family. You can follow Mr. Seaberg on Twitter at SeabergD, and the website is DanielSeaberg.com. And the book is, again, The Digital Diet, available everywhere. Thanks so much for the reschedule. We really enjoyed talking to you. Let's keep in touch, Daniel. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Lisa. Kevin and Bean listener Megan contacted us yesterday. We were having a conversation about a transsexual in the news, yes. And she says, hey, I'd love to be able to afford the surgery. I'd like to be fully a woman. Right now, I'm still half a man.
Right.
It's tough for us out here.
It's not half a man. Just got a little man.
She's a little man, right.
She's mostly female.
And I invited her to come on the show because I am fascinated with how difficult that journey must be. And I think we'll all learn a little something. Coming up after the top of the hour, it's your chance to ask a transsexual here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Right now, Ralph's got the showbiz beat. What's going on?
Would anybody be interested in a TV series starring Hannibal Lecter? Would you tune in every week to watch Hannibal Lecter eat people?
Don't we already have Dexter?
That's what I'm thinking. And apparently, maybe it's because of the success of Dexter that NBC has picked up the rights to a Hannibal Lecter TV series based on the character, of course, from Silence of the Lambs and Red Dragon. Apparently, the real drive of the series will be the relationship between Hannibal and his FBI profiler. It'll be that relationship that they focus on. I guess it'll be a cat and mouse game, but how long can you sustain that even?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It's like having one villain with one hero chasing after that person week after week after week.
I mean, and the beauty of Dexter is that you actually have some sympathy for him and in some ways root him on.
Right.
How are you going to root on Hannibal?
And you get a different victim every week. Right. So, you know, the person he's hunting down to take care of, there's an individual fresh story every week regarding that. So yeah. I don't predict much success, but maybe it'll surprise us. Anyway.
That is too much. They didn't have to do all that.
Hannibal Lecter series coming next fall on NBC. More TV news. Roger Ebert says his show Ebert Presents at the Movies will be going off the air at the end of the season unless someone steps up and puts up the money for another season.
I didn't know it was still on.
He financed the first season himself with a small grant from one of the PBS underwriters. But now he said he can't afford to do it anymore, and he's looking for someone else to step up and fork over the money for his PBS review show. It needs to go away. I don't know if anyone's watching it. It's rough.
He on it with his crazy robot voice?
He is. What he does is he'll write something for the end of the show, and then have someone come in and voice it for him.
Like, oh, I see.
Some high-profile actor or friend or something will come in and read his essay. But they have two new people reviewing the week's movies. This chick and this guy, Igor Stravinsky or something.
And
they're the most unlikable couple on television. They really are hard to watch. So I love that he's a great critic, but the show has no place on my television.
I think you're probably right. And I also think that the days of needing a movie review show have passed in that if you want, it takes 5 seconds to look up 1,000 reviews on the internet. Why waste time looking for it on television?
I guess they assume it's because you can get more in-depth and cover more ground than just a thumbnail sketch, perhaps, of a movie. You know, they do more about history of films and you know, influences, and they look back at other directors and things like that. I mean, I think there is a place on television for sort of intelligent film criticism, but this show is not very entertaining. So, see you, Raj. And while we're
there, he is now.
There's Raj now. While we're talking about films, we've had young Einstein, of course, young Sherlock Holmes, young Frankenstein.
Now,
Young Indiana Jones. Now, Universal says they're working a movie about young Leonardo da Vinci.
Oh, okay.
They want to give you the backstory about the Renaissance inventor and painter who gave us, of course, the Mona Lisa and the Last Supper and invented the helicopter and the tank and the calculator. And he was a smart dude.
Imagine how much the kids in his high school hated him because he was always the smartest guy in the room, and he always had the best answers.
And he was also a hall monitor. Freaking narc.
I'm sure he was.
He used to wear that banner and everything. Walk, don't run in the hallways. F you, Leonardo da Vinci, they would
Ran
say.
Ran for all the elections, probably.
Right, one class president. And Where's Waldo, the movie? You ready?
The movie?
Where's Waldo, the movie?
What?
Is this a live-action movie based on Where's Waldo.
But...
is it a bunch of people looking for Waldo?
I'm assuming that probably will be part of it.
Nope.
That book series, by the way, has sold more than 55 million books.
I got to be honest, I didn't know it was a whole book series.
Oh, yeah, there's a series of Where's Waldo books.
Really?
Where do you think Waldo came from, Lisa?
I don't know. I just thought there was one like book? A picture, and then you had to find Waldo.
Oh, yeah.
Then everyone just passed around the same picture until you found Waldo and then moved
really
it on?
I didn't give it much thought.
No, there's a series of books, and I'm guessing this movie's just going to be a lot of crowd scenes with a guy in a glasses and a red and white striped sweater, and you just have to sit there for 2 hours and try to pick him out of the crowd scenes. I'm guessing that's what it is.
Look, I have no idea, no plans whatsoever to get into show business. Let's face it, I'm not qualified for anything. But I would make an excellent Waldo.
You would.
I think I'd perfect for this role.
The only problem is no one would look for you.
No one would be interested
to find you. We would just like you to stay missing. Where's Bean? That's a question that's never been asked.
You know, I didn't play hide and seek much as a kid. I played a lot of hide, and then for whatever reason, the other kids lost interest and went home.
This on the heels, by the way, of last week's announcement where they're making a major, big budget live action film of Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego?
Oh, that's right. But that was fun. I like that.
What? That's the same thing. It's a stupid game. It's like, oh, she's in Bolivia. She stole a plate. Where is she?
She's looking for thieves.
Oh, for God's sake!
I want a good. Movie.
That is a terrible idea.
That was Gumshoe Lisa.
Today's celebrity birthdays. Bonnie Raitt, 62 years old today. Leif Garrett turns 50. Gordon Ramsay, TV chef, is 45. Courtney Thorne Smith.
Yeah.
From According to Jim and Ally McBeal. Mm-hmm. 90210, she was on that show. She's
Melrose 40, Place? Melrose, was she Melrose,
that's
Place,
Melrose
too?
Place? That's what
yeah,
I meant to say.
She was
on everything.
44 years old today. Parker Posey, one of my favorite actresses, is 43. Gretchen Mol celebrates her 38th birthday. Tara Reid from American Pie is 36. Dania Ramirez is 32 years old. A lot of hot chicks celebrating their birthday today. And then Jack Osborne has to come and ruin everything for everyone by being all not hot and chickish. He is 26 years old. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the show.
Thanks for listening to the Kevin and Bean Show on the world famous K-Rock. It's 106.7 KROQ. Hey, how about more tickets for the Twilight Saga Breaking Dawn Part 1? You get to see it on Monday. It opens up a week from Friday. We'll give you those tickets later on today, plus more tickets for the Disneyland Resort Park Hopper as well. Too much going on. Too much free stuff.
Park Hopper sounds a little slutty to me. I don't know.
Yeah,
just
I don't think that's
around from park
what's
to park.
Intended.
How about a park relationship, people? How about some park monogamy?
We were talking earlier in the week here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Ralph, I think you brought a story to our attention about Kelly Osborne, who had had a very public breakup with her boyfriend of some time. And she they were engaged.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Luke Worrell.
He left her for a transsexual, right? For a pre-op transsexual, if I remember the story correctly.
Right, yes.
And we were talking about that and talking about how difficult that must have been for Kelly. And we got an interesting email from a listener named Megan who brought some perspective to it that we could not have imagined. But listen to this. I'll read the first part of it, and then we'll meet Megan. Hey, Bean, I was listening to K-Rock this morning on my way to work. I heard you guys talking about Kelly's fiancé dating a pre-op transsexual, and I was a little hurt. I'm sure you guys are just doing your shtick or whatever, but I am a pre-op trans person. A word I've never heard before, by the way. Mm-hmm. And to hear you guys, DJs at my favorite station that I've listened to forever, making fun of her situation and making a bigger deal out of it was just kind of heartbreaking. I'm sure you guys don't care. It's just we'd like to live our lives, and navigating the muddy waters of dating and love is not easy. The truth of the matter is, by the way, me picking up now, we actually do care, and that's why we wrote Megan back and asked if she would join us in studio. And she is here on the Kevin and Bean Show right now. Hi, Megan. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Doing great, thanks. Like I told you off the air, I appreciate when listeners take the time to write if they hear something that they disagree with or don't like or want to comment on. Go ahead and send us an email, because very often we will get back in touch with you, because we do like it to be a two-way street. What was it that bugged you about the conversation we were having about the Kelly Osborne situation?
You know, it's one of those things, you know, Chaz Bono was on Dancing with the Stars.
Right.
And, you know, if you go online and read comments that, you know, people, like viewers, make about him being on there and about, you know, you're not really a man. You know, it's yeah. it felt like there always has to be a reminder, you know, that people are trans. It's like, you know, people want to say you're not this, you know, you are this. And when I heard it, I was like, you know, for Kelly, like, she got cheated on, you know, like, to me, that's the worst part. Yeah. And right. I think you were saying that yesterday, Lisa, yeah. that's the most important thing. And I, you know, the question was like, is it worse to be cheated on by somebody who is the same sex? So it was mm-hmm. kind of two things for me. The first thing was same sex.
Like, yeah, as I know. Read your email, Megan, I realized that we were sort of off the mark by taking that story and then making the leap to having lost someone that you were dating to someone of the same sex, because it really is sort of apples and oranges. It's not the same thing. And as I read your email, I wanted to apologize because that was, I think, some false logic on our part, and I could see where that would be disturbing to you.
I think it's apples, oranges, and pears, because this is a whole whole thing in the middle yeah. that I really am not at all clear about.
Yeah, I think the point was that the leap of logic that I made that in retrospect, I think was false, was that for Luke Worrell to be with a pre-op transsexual, he must be at least okay with someone who is pre-op transsexual,
right.
which is a woman who happens to have a penis. You have to be okay with that situation in order to engage in a relationship with someone like that. And then we made the leap to someone who would just be okay with having sex with someone of the same sex. And it is too big a leap to make, and I wanted to apologize to you for that.
I appreciate it. Yeah. And I use the word trans person just to be inclusive of male to female.
Well, Megan, most of us, I don't know, maybe I'm dead wrong at this, most of us don't know a trans person. I mean, I think it's mysterious.
I would differ.
Really?
There's a vet that I is in the practice that I go to mm-hmm. who is in the process, clearly. We've never had the discussion, but I have seen the changes, and there's a place where I get my car worked on where the guy at the front desk was clearly in the middle of that. So you do more and more run into people.
But see, that's the thing. You guys, like you're saying, you know that they're, you know, trans, but there's so many trans people where,
you
wouldn't know by meeting them. I mean, I don't think that's a big deal, but I think people make the assumption that you're always going to know, you know, when you're talking to a trans person.
Right.
You know?
All right. Let me ask a couple of basic questions.
Sure.
And again, this is Kevin Bean, listener Megan, who's in studio. And we're going to give you a chance to call in with your questions for Megan here in just a couple minutes. Is if you're a person who decides at some point to, if you live in a country where it is even possible, and if you can even get the medical assistance to have the surgery, which I know is not the case in a lot of places around the world, but is it a deal just like being born gay or born straight, where it's something you know from a very early age?
I think it differs for each person. I know for me, I knew around 5 or 6 that mm-hmm. I was different. But you know, when you're that young, I think it's similar, you know, to being gay in that, how do you put that into words at that young of an age? You know, you grow up knowing that you're different, but you know, I think some people hide that, and you know, they learn to cope with it, you know, just like anything else. And that's definitely what I did.
Because your sexual identity really is sort of in flux, even for a heterosexual at that point. You know, you have maybe you want to run around with the girls in the schoolyard and tease them and stuff, but you don't really connect that to sexuality so much. It's just sort of who you are as a person.
I think it's an evolving process. Yeah.
Right.
And is there a point at which, because I'm sure transsexual is something that you learn about later than gay.
Right.
So was there a point where you thought, maybe I'm gay?
Yeah, there were many times in my life. You know, when I was younger, my first kiss was with a boy when I was in 5th and 6th grade, and I was a boy. So for me, the gender feelings came first,
right? Mm-hmm.
And then the sexuality stuff came, you know, and, you know.
And how do you figure out what that difference is?
I mean, it took, I started transitioning just 4 years ago.
Wow.
So for me.
And how old are you now, Megan?
I'm 42. Yeah.
Oh,
wow.
She looks so much younger.
Yeah, you look great for 42.
She was like 28.
So what's
the water?
So what did you tell people in your 20s and 30s then about where you were at? I mean, did people just think you were a gay male?
Actually, I was actually married to a female. So, you know, if I showed you guys a picture, you know, of me, you know, pre-transition, I look and sound, you know, a lot different than I do now.
You must have been a pretty dude, though. Because you've got those features, like those
great
Rob Lowe features,
yeah.
Where you must have been an attractive man, but in a very sort of pretty way.
It's difficult, though, because, you know, if you're, you know, a fairly attractive man and you're getting attention from women, but, you know, you're kind of confused and trying to figure things out, it can be more of a hassle than anything.
But mm-hmm. I'm so confused. Okay, so your first kiss was
right.
with a boy.
Right.
So you weren't attracted to women.
It's, I mean, attraction to me is kind of a funny word. Like, especially when you're, you know, in fifth and sixth grade, I would have crushes, you know, on boys like the other girls did. But, you know, I didn't want to get beat up. I mean,
sure.
That was, you know, that
right.
was a thing. Like, I was hanging out with, you know, girls and stuff. And, you know.
Because that was acceptable.
Exactly. But as you got, you know, you're getting into like sixth grade, seventh grade, all of a sudden that's not acceptable.
Right. At what point or were there a series of circumstances that led you to the conclusion that you had to make the change? All right, it's not enough to feel this way and to live my life, but now I literally have to go under the knife and I need to start taking the hormones and I need to make the transition to another sex.
Excuse me, there actually was. There was, it's going to sound a little bit corny and cheesy, but I had a dream that I died. And I was kind of floating over the funeral and everybody was like, you know, looking, I was looking down at everybody that I knew that was there and nobody had anything mean to say about me. It was everybody I ever loved that was saying super nice things. And when I woke up, you know, I was crying because I realized that nobody really knew who I was.
Mm-hmm.
And that feeling of, you know, driving to work every day and going to work and coming home and interacting with everybody and, you know, living 36 years of my life feeling like I'm not really being honest with people. I was thinking, you know, if I got hit by a bus today, then nobody ever really knew who I was. And that really was kind of the point for me. And, you know, there were things leading up to that, but it was living an inauthentic life, really.
What an enormous burden it must be, too, to have a secret, in essence, that you're keeping all, you know, 24 hours a day from everyone that you know. You have to live a secret identity, in essence.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Do you know people now that you've met who only know you as a woman and only think of you as a woman?
Yeah, I mean, almost everybody only. Like, I lived in Orange County before, and I moved to Los Angeles, and everybody that I come in contact with now, they're new people.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, I really don't have, you know, people like, oh, you know.
You have a new life.
Yeah, exactly.
You have a new life.
And,
all right.
Yeah.
We have to take a break here in a moment. We're going to take your phone calls from Megan if you want to call. Your chance to ask a transsexual at 1-800-520-1067. I have to ask one thing before the break, and that is you made reference to in your email how difficult it is navigating your dating life because you are a woman and you are attracted to men, but at some point.
Straight men.
Straight men, right?
Yeah.
But at some point, well, we've got to deal with the fact that you have a penis. I mean, is that something you bring up early in a relationship or just wait? What do you do?
It varies, you know, from person to person. I myself, I want to get it out there right in the beginning because what I don't want to do
and
is...
And you mean bring it up in a conversation,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, yeah.
Like, when you say get it out there right in the beginning. There are some restaurants where you could be arrested if that was a particular case on a first date.
None of that. but it's definitely, you know, I personally prefer... If we go to a bar and I meet you, I will bring that up.
I think that's fair.
Ralph will start buying more drinks if he finds out. That's
well. Here's the thing, and I know that it's difficult for you because, I know we have to go to a break, but you are attracted to straight men, but there is a certain percentage of men who are attracted to transsexuals.
Totally.
Now that may not be interesting to you either because you don't want to be identified as a transsexual, so maybe you don't want that kind of person. So you really are kind of in between a rock and a hard place.
There are a lot of guys listening to the show right now that when they go to bed tonight, they're going to be thinking about that, and they've never told a single person. It turns them on.
I mean, transsexual porn is an enormous part of the industry. A lot of guys watch that stuff because it turns them on.
Is that guy, I mean, I know I'm trying to classify people, but would you consider that guy bisexual?
I don't think there is really a niche. I think sexuality can be fluid on this on a scale, and I think some people are just attracted to the femininity of a transgendered person, and also the sex organ, of having a penis.
Megan, would you date someone who was into transsexuals, or do you only want to date someone who's into women?
I struggle with that sometimes. Yeah. You know, if I date someone who is, quote, into trans people, usually there's one thing, you know. I mean, there's many things that go into the, you know, somebody being attracted to somebody.
Right.
But, you know, I think for those guys, that's usually like the cherry on top, you know. And, you know, I personally, and I know this varies from, you know, trans person to trans person, I don't use what I have down there. I don't want anybody near it. I don't, you know.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, like I don't.
I'm the same way.
Yeah.
Luckily for Bean, there's no one interested in that area, so it doesn't really matter.
All right, we have so many more questions, including I have to find out more about the surgery, too, that you'd like to get, because I know very little about that as well. So many questions for our friend Megan here on the Kevin and Bean Show. If you'd like to ask a transsexual, you can. 1-800-520-1067. We'll be right back on the Kevin and Bean Show. And Jeopardy listener Megan is in studio here on the world famous Q-Rock. We are doing Ask a Transsexual. Megan was kind enough to write to us. We were kind enough to write back and say, hey, come on down. So we've been talking. Before we go to listener phone calls, we're going to do two segments of phone calls. If you've ever wanted to ask a transsexual, now is your chance, Megan. You must get a reaction like this a lot. Someone just identifies himself as E. Dude, he's still a man. All of a sudden, we can change sex or race if we just say we are. Until he gets his penis cut off, he's still a man to me, period. What's your response to something like that? Because you feel like a woman, right?
Right. My response would be, before you judge me and put me in a box, have dinner with me, let's go to the movies, let's talk for 3 or 4 hours, and you tell me at the end of that conversation, you know, if you think you're having dinner with a man or a woman.
Right.
You know, body parts don't, to me, body parts don't identify whether somebody's a man or a woman, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, we don't have
it's
any
idea. It's
more
complicated
idea.
Than yeah. that.
Yeah. That feels like a blanket denial that people aren't necessarily born to... on the outside, what they are on the inside.
Right.
And there's a lot of people, I think, who feel that way, just refuse to acknowledge anything beyond whatever their comfort zone is, too. They can't possibly comprehend of anything larger than whatever their narrow vision of the world is, so they just lash out in anger.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because the way he feels that way, even if you had the operation, he would still deny yeah. you your womanhood.
Because your chromosomes wouldn't change, so therefore right. he can still argue that you're one rather than the
totally.
Other. That's yeah. a good point.
I have one question before we go to phone calls, too.
Lisa!
Just one.
Lisa's interested, Bean. Leave her alone.
When you made that decision that you weren't being authentic,
right?
How daunting was the idea? And did it, in fact, stop you at some point? Like, oh my God, there's no way I can do this. I mean, it sounds like such a huge task to change.
Yeah,
it's a big mountain to climb, right?
It's a huge mountain to climb. You know, for me, the most important thing was I felt like I always knew who I was. This wasn't about, you know, oh, I have to, you know. I was always authentic, I felt, except for showing society who I was.
Right.
So for me, you know, I had to do a lot of research and find out, like, how do you do the process?
Yeah.
The internet is full of information, you know, about trans, you know, we call it the transitioning process. And everybody kind of defines that themselves. I'm very organized and I'm a planner. So I had an Excel spreadsheet and I literally went through and I was like, you know, facial hair removal and hormones and, you know, surgeries.
Step one,
and,
step two.
Yeah, exactly. And right. when did I want to have those done? And, you know, how do I come out to people and when do I come out to people? And,
right.
You know,
wow. Yeah. So you've been taking the hormones now. You look and sound like a woman. You have breasts, right?
I do.
Are they good? Are they good breasts?
They're about a 36B. Can I say that online?
Yes.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, sure. That's not.
They're
that's
better
nice.
Than mine.
So the very last piece of the puzzle is the genital surgery. That's the last thing that you need to do. Is that the only thing that's left?
I mean, for me personally, you know, I consider that kind of, you know, the last step. Again, it's different for everyone, but for me, that's kind of the icing on top. I thought it would be a lot more important to have surgery. At the very beginning of transition, I was like, I have to do this, like, you know, really quickly. But when I, you know, as I got into transition and socially, you know, people were seeing me, how I identified, all of a sudden it wasn't as important. You know, it wasn't, yeah, I have to take a shower and I know that it's there and stuff, but it's really easy not to know that you have it there if it's just kind of hidden away and you're just interacting with people.
And the biggest part for you was presenting yourself to the world.
Exactly.
And 95% of the time, we're presenting ourselves with clothes on.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, right. Well, for you, Ralph, it's about 70%.
I know, but I'm not average. I said average.
Megan, you mentioned in your email that insurance is not going to cover the surgery.
Yeah.
And I imagine it's extremely expensive.
Yeah, it's $15,000 to $25,000, depending on where you go.
Wow. Are you going out of the country?
My plan is yeah, to go out of the country, probably to Canada, but I'm still
Why?
Going to.
Why out of the country?
I mean, there's different surgeons and, you know,
it's
a lot
cheaper.
Of times on, it's about $18,000, $19,000, but I really like the surgeon that I'm, you know, that I'm kind of looking
gotcha.
At right now.
And without getting into too much detail, they're able to use what you have now and turn that into female genitals?
They do. I mean, basically, you know, it's invasive plastic surgery. Mm. So, you know, from male to females, you know, they basically create a pocket inside of you. And, you know, I mean, you can Google, you know, labiaplasty. I mean, the results really do look good.
Will you have sensation?
Yeah, there's sensation. And
wow.
You know, you can orgasm. I mean,
it's easier to make this transition than to go the other way.
Female to male.
Female to male is a little bit more difficult with the bottom surgery.
Right.
You know, it's just, it's easier to, you know,
go
inside the body than outside. Yeah.
All right, we have to take one more break, and I apologize to our fine listeners who are on hold, but I promise you we're going to get to your calls, as many as we can take at 1-800-520-1067. And frankly, I'm just excited to hear Omar's intro because, you know, this is what I've been looking forward to every time we do an Ask Us.
It's remarkably respectful, I think you'll find.
Really?
Yeah,
that's not
really
the Omar
is.
We know. Yeah. Kevin and Bean listener Megan is here. Your questions, I promise, after a brief break right here on the Kevin and Bean Show. 1-800-520-1067. Let's do it on the Kevin and Bean Show here on K-Rock. It's time to Ask a Transsexual.
I wanna ask a transsexual. I wanna know you from the inside. I wanna ask a transsexual. Come on, let's all ask right now.
All right, thank you, Omar. 1-800-520-1067. I apologize to everybody that had to hold on. Let's get right to Melissa first as we burn through some phone calls for Kevin and Bean listener Megan, who is kind enough to join us in studio today. Melissa, thank you for joining us. Thank you for holding on. What do you got?
Hi. Megan, I wanted to know if you knew at such a young age that you were not attracted to females, what made you marry? Was it social pressures, or what was the reason you got married?
I think it was social pressures, but also, you know, pressure that I put on myself, excuse me, where, you know, when I got married, she was my best friend. And I think that each person kind of defines for themselves what's important, you know, in their life and in a marriage. And I really honestly felt like I could make it work. I don't really feel like I was being deceitful, you know.
You weren't Kim Kardashian about it.
No,
you actually believed in marriage.
I did.
Yes,
yes.
Yeah.
But you were a man then, living as a man. Did your wife know that you were uncomfortable in your body?
I was actually married twice, and you know, the first time I was married, she didn't, and I wanted to do things different the second time, so I did, you know, tell her that I had gender issues and. You know, just kind of how I felt. And I felt like that's what made me a little bit more sensitive and, you know, a
some
little
of the
bit
qualities
different.
She really
yeah,
likes
exactly,
about you.
Exactly. But I mean, I didn't think that I would ever transition.
Right.
You know,
Right.
I wouldn't have gone into marriage, you know, if I knew that this was where I was going to, you know, where I was going to end up.
Gotcha.
Interesting. Melissa, thank you so much for the call. Let's try Stacy, line 4 here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Stacy, ask a transsexual. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Good morning.
Hey, Stacy.
I wanted to know, like, how long was the process, and was it painful?
Go Raiders!
It was actually probably more physically painful. I'm sorry, emotionally painful than it was physically painful. You know, it's as your life is changing, you know, and you're kind of, you know, getting used to, like, you know, I don't want to say new identity because it's not like a black and white thing, you know, it's a transition, you know, and I think that, you know, for me, the emotional side of it, the navigating, you know, the waters, you know, of living female versus male, to me, I had, you know, more difficulty. There were, you know, sometimes physical pains, electrolysis, you know, facial hair removal. I've had almost 300 hours.
Wow.
You know, they take a single, you know, electric probe and they stick it in your skin and they zap you. Until it kills the root, and you know, 300 hours is expensive
and
painful.
Painful.
Yeah. So,
and I imagine letting go of everything that you were to the public, to the outside world before, all those things, regardless of how difficult it may have been for you, that still was your persona for so many years.
It
to
was.
Have to jettison all of that and pretty much start from scratch, I think, would be sort of a mental challenge.
Yeah, it was. I kind of, the way that I kind of describe it is, you know, I'm on two mountains, and there's this long, kind of shaky wooden bridge with planks missing. And, you know, the way that I looked at my transition was, you know, I'm kind of walking from one solid mountain on the shaky bridge over to this other mountain. And, you know, the wind's blowing, and I'm kind of falling off. And, you know, now I feel like I'm back on, you know, another mountain. But there was a period where it was like, you know, I didn't feel like I had my footing, and I'm trying to, like, you know, figure out, like, you know, what is this life? And constantly asking myself, like any other person, where am I going with my life? And, you know, what am I about? You know, it's kind of basic questions.
Wow. Now that you're a woman and have been for some time, though, isn't it great to not have to pretend to like sports?
It is.
I would imagine.
I still joke around with my friends, though. You know, I'll read Yahoo Sports and just throw something out there, you know, to the guys to get them riled up about Kobe or, you know, the Oakland Raiders or something, just to joke around.
But in terms of actual time, you've been transitioning for
4 years.
4 years now, and you anticipate it's going to be another...
I mean, I feel like I'm already transitioned. You know, to me, transition is kind of complete for me when I walk in the room and, you know, I'm interacting with you guys and it's...
And everyone thinks of you as a woman.
Yeah, right. Okay. It seems complete to us, too. But I guess the operation maybe would be the final step for you. You said it's not that important, but I think eventually you'd like to get that accomplished, right?
Yeah, I would. I mean, that to me is kind of like the cherry on top.
I gotcha.
Let's try Jonathan. He is on line 3, joining us here on the Kevin Devine Show. Unfortunately, we are almost out of time with Megan. Hi, Jonathan. You're on the air.
Hi, Megan. I actually am an early transition FTM myself, and I am actually curious how you handle transition in the workplace.
Were you working at the same place and you had to? No, you weren't.
I started a new job. You know, basically... I used to be in the mortgage industry, and you know where that went. So, you know, I went about a year and a half before I started working, and then I went into a completely different job. So I started, you know, post-transition in the new job. I didn't transition in the same job.
Right, exactly. Thank you very much for the call, Jonathan. What about longtime friends and family, for that matter, by the way? How has that been for them to adjust to you with a new name and a new look over the years?
For me personally, it seems like it's been fine. My family's very supportive.
That's great.
I love my mom and dad and my brother and sister a lot, and they're very supportive. And my longtime friends, I don't feel like I really lost, you know, a lot of friends, and that story is a lot different than a lot of trans people, you know, that lose everybody.
I wonder if it's easier because you do appear so feminine, because you do appear like a woman. If it was easier for you, you may not know the answer to this question, because there are some transgenders or transsexuals, rather, who the transition is not great. You know what I mean?
It's not aesthetically pleasing.
I can see why they're doing it. I understand the reasons behind it, but still, the visual isn't as effective as it is with others.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that was one of the things that I considered when I transitioned. You know, I'm only 5'5", and, you know, I felt like physically I wouldn't have that many problems.
Right.
You know, but I look at people who maybe, you know, who are starting transition or, you know, who have transitioned, who might not have the presentation, you know, that they're shooting for or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to me, those people need even more love, you know, because it's like, I mean, imagine.
They're even more brave, perhaps.
Yeah, you know, like, I mean, there's violence that takes place, you know, against trans people. That actually, November 20th is Day of Remembrance for trans people to kind of memorialize all the trans people that we've lost just this year. Mm. We read names aloud and stuff. There's a lot of violence, and it's...
That's insane.
It's a long process, yeah.
It is. Last question for you, Megan, and that is, 10 years from now, what do you think your life is going to be like? And I have to ask you now, because you'll be way too old for us to be interested in 10 years, so we won't have you back on.
You're sweet, but Bean.
What do you think... Well, a woman over 50. Come on. Yeah, what are we going to do with that, Ralph? What do you think your life is going to be like in 10 years?
Honestly, I don't know. Hopefully married and, you know, living in a big beach house in Malibu.
me too.
My film career will just be started. I'm not sure, but that's one of the things about my life. I view it as a journey. So, you know, to me, it's more about the journey than like, this is where I want to be. You know, I'm kind of looking forward to all the little, you know,
sure.
And you must appreciate that here and now you feel more comfortable probably in your life than you have up to this point.
Yeah.
So that's an accomplishment.
Don't get me wrong, I had a good life as a guy. I was making really good money, you know, and I had a lot of love in my life. I didn't have a miserable life, but the life that I have now, I'm a million times happier than I ever was.
That's
and
great.
I have a lot less materially.
Well, like we said when you sat down, we appreciate that you took the time to write to us because we were fascinated to, and so grateful to have the opportunity to have you in and hear a little bit of your story. And I think our listeners did too. So please do keep in touch. Let us know how you're doing, okay?
I will. Thank you guys for having me.
Thank
I
you.
I can't believe I'm sitting here. I want to
ask a transsexual. You're listening to the world-famous K-Rock at 106.7 KROQ. It's the most wonderful time of year. If you'd like to be Miss Double December 2012, we would like you to be that. 21 and up, ladies. You can go to krock.com or kevinandbean.com right now and fill out your entry form. Send us in a couple of pictures. Ralph, you had some good advice for the ladies who have been sending, like, surveillance shots from 80 yards away as their photo.
We don't need your passport pic. We don't need driver's license photos. we don't need a sketch someone did of you on a cocktail napkin. We need a decent picture of you. Grab. Everyone's got a camera now or a cell phone that takes pictures, just grab it, doll yourself up, have one of your friends take a photo, keep taking them until you like what you see, and then send that in. Don't just send any old crappy class picture in or something like that. Come on, for God's sakes.
Or you with four other people.
Yeah, say, oh, I'm right, third exactly. from the left.
Yeah.
You have till 1 week from Friday to enter, and then we're going to be doing the live broadcast in Fullerton down at the Slide Bar like we do, and that's coming up on Friday, December 2nd, I want to say, if I remember correctly. So, yes. Yeah, go to KROQ.com for all the details. Time for the Showbiz Beat now here on a Tuesday Kevin Amin Show. Here's Ralph.
I got a little crush on Megan, I got to tell you.
She's delightful.
Got a little something going on there.
And you know that there's a chewy surprise at the end of that day, too.
Oh,
so.
Stop it.
Something to look forward to.
We just had like a good half hour of like building a bridge.
It's been.
And you're blowing it up like the River Kwai. You've got dynamite on the bridge and you're pushing the plunger.
She's probably. I hope she hadn't gotten out to her car yet and she wouldn't hear that.
Oh, you're a bad man. Kate Major, ex-girlfriend of Michael Lowen, in the news today. I don't know if anyone caught Dr. Drew's Life Changers yesterday, where he had Kate Major on. And then he brought out Michael Lowen's mistress, Chris, to sit on the couch side by side with Kate Major.
Did they fight?
Sadly, no, Lisa. I think Drew was a little bummed out because no one threw blows.
Damn it.
And security guard Steve couldn't get up there on stage and separate the two of them. That's the same show, right?
Yeah, pretty
much. Might as well be.
Kate Major had a minor brawl at LAX Sunday night. Word is she was on the plane, seated in first class, and had a run-in with another passenger. Words were exchanged, and then Kate started throwing blows to the dome, started swinging at the passenger. Cops had to be called. She was removed from the aircraft. She was issued a citation for misdemeanor battery. And ironically, she was on her way to Florida to attend a court proceeding regarding her restraining order against Michael Lowen for his violent tendencies, so there may be something going on here more than meets the eye.
I don't know how much to believe of what Kate said on Dr. Drew's show yesterday, but Michael Lowen is a monster, right?
Yes.
The impression I got is he's just all hopped up on goofballs and just raping everybody up in here.
Yeah, I don't think he's a good person, but at the same time, she struck me as a little pathological.
Right.
Like, she could be making stories up. She's wifty in her own right. So when you see somebody obviously has some crazy tendencies, how much can you really believe them? I think it goes to their credibility when you see that she's a bit of a nut loaf herself.
Yeah. They do need to be apart, though. I know that much.
Yeah.
Kate and Laura.
The person I felt for was Chris, the mistress who came out there and sat on the couch. And she was like, look, I didn't know about her. I didn't know about any of this. And I was like, why are you on this show, Chris? Why did you even agree to show up? Why would you do this to yourself?
And how did she not know about her? We all knew about her.
Well, he said he was broken up and that Kate kept stalking him and kept trying to get back together. And I wish he would leave me alone. When he was with this Chris, that's what he was saying about her. And then he would go out and say, I have to call Lindsay. I have to talk to Lindsay on the phone. And he would talk to Kate Major when he was on the phone because he doesn't communicate with Lindsay anymore. She won't have anything to do with him. So
wow.
It was
wow.
Fascinating. Fascinating stuff. So is this. Remember William Hung?
Hey! Sure, of course.
This
from American Idol.
Cracked me up. They did a whatever happened to check in with him. And it turns out that Hung, who of course was on American Idol season 3, he was the one who was so bad that he became a star. Only in America can you have so little talent. Can you be so bad at what you're doing that America will embrace you and make you a star?
Pay my
dues. He did pay his dues. He's got that going for him.
Time after time.
That was really just that one time, William.
I've done my sentence.
I don't remember you being sentenced then.
I committed no crime.
And that's the guy, if I recall that season, who got into the top 10 of American Idol.
I don't think he ever did. No, I think
really.
No, he was. They made fun of him and didn't pass him along. But his bad audition became such a phenomenon that he got a career out of it.
So what is he up to now?
Well,
he hasn't sustained a career in music.
No, his 15 minutes are over and fame does fade. Now he's working for the LA County Sheriff's Department.
I knew that. He works with my stepbrother.
What? He apparently is a technical crime analyst. He goes over data and research to find trends and patterns in crime.
He doesn't seem smart enough. He doesn't seem smart enough for a job.
No, I think he's socially retarded, but I think he is well smart. I think he's one of those brainy dudes. He was going to Stanford or something.
Yeah, Stanford or Berkeley or someplace. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So statistics and crime patterns apparently is what he specializes in. Sometimes he'll go out to a crime scene and then just break into shebangs and then just to entertain the troops. You know, not that there are troops at a crime scene.
That would be awkward.
That would be very awkward, and they'd probably be tramping all over the evidence. Today's celebrity birthday is Bonnie Raitt. She's 62 years old today. Leif Garrett is 50. Chef Gordon Ramsay celebrates his 45th birthday. Courtney Thorne Smith celebrates her 44th. Parker Posey's 43. Gretchen Mol is 38. Tara Reid from American Pie is 36.
Okay, what do I do with that? I'm starting to get a lot of complaints.
Leave that bell alone with Tara Reid.
Okay, yeah. She's past her expiration date.
Her bell days are gone. Right. Danny Ramirez, though, however, you can give her a nice clear bell. And Jack Osborne of the Osbournes. He's 26 years old. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
The world famous K-Rock at 106.7 KROQ. Thanks for listening on a Tuesday Kevin and Bean Show. Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, Lisa, out today. We'll talk to our friend Adam Sessler from X-Play on G4 in a minute. Is expected to gross over $1 billion between now and Christmas.
Really?
Some of these video game franchises are so much bigger than some of these movie franchises these days. It's unbelievable. And the numbers that the Batman Arkham game has been doing have just been phenomenal, too, in the last few weeks. So we'll talk to him, Adam Sessler, about all of that coming up here on the Kevin and Bean Show. First, though, Bill Cosby, back in the news. Cosby was a giant of stand-up and a big TV star back in the 60s, continued through the 70s, but he'll forever be known as Dr. Huxtable on The Cosby Show in the 1980s. But It seems like since that show went off the air, he's one of these comedians who doesn't believe that it's necessary to be funny anymore. You know what I'm talking about? He just got cranky. Yeah. And now the only time you ever see Bill Cosby is he'll show up on a show and he'll be complaining about kids and their damned rap music, or why are their pants so baggy, or complaining about something. He's always bitching about something. Well, now he's decided to put it all down in a book about how you should raise your children. He made an appearance on the Today Show this week. He's doing a bunch of interviews talking about his brand new book called I Didn't Ask to Be Born, But I'm Glad I Was. It's Tips for Parenting from Mr. Bill Cosby, former comedian, who joins us on the Kevin and Bean Show right now. Hi, Dr. Cosby. How are you?
Kevin and Bean, the two baseball scholars of the same possession.
Okay. And this is the other thing about Bill. When he does an interview, he's not only not funny, you can barely make out what he's saying. Bill,
I don't believe you guys are the same as the both.
Okay. I have no idea what you're saying, but do I have it right? The book is called I Didn't Ask to Be Born, But I'm Glad I Was.
Yes,
what's this about?
I didn't ask to be born, but I'm glad I was.
Uh-huh.
The book.
You're writing about your tips on how we should be raising our children, because, of course, you know that being an actor and a comedian.
Well, the children are thriving with the players to crowd and the hands of the rampant parents to crowd and horse and hair.
Anyone getting any of this? Because I'm having trouble making it out.
When you raise your children, you must be furthering the present. And the present has thrown pudding pops.
Okay, I did hear pudding pops. Yes. You're not doing commercials for that anymore, though, right?
I hope so, yes.
Oh, but you hope so? Okay.
I have a couple of patients.
Did you raise Theo and Rudy and all the Cosby kids? Did you raise them the way you think we should be raising our kids in real life?
Yes. Put them on television and spend half an hour with them every week.
Okay, but that's just the TV show. They were actors, though. They weren't your real kids. That's not how you can really raise a family.
No, you should something with all of the children and driving when you talk to the woman, use the roofies.
Okay, I heard something about roofies, and I know you don't mean that.
That wasn't putting on the pops. And if you don't do that, then you got some pain for surprising.
You sound like the man with no face that we had on you from that one time on the show, Bill. What about discipline? What kind of tips can you give me for discipline? I mean, are you someone who will ground a kid, or will you spank a kid, or what will you do?
I always tell the children, I brought you into this world, I can take you out.
I have heard you threaten your children with death before, yes.
That is what discipline makes them think you'll murder them. And
what?
Then get out a big knife and start slicing around.
I think I missed the alibi part of the equation. All right. We're almost out of time, Bill. I didn't ask to be born, but I'm glad I was. What's the one best piece of information people will take away when they read your book?
Watch it wiggle, see it jingle, Jell-O bread gelatin.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen. There it is. Words to live by. You are listening to the right station on the right show. If you would like to attend the red carpet world premiere with the stars of the Twilight Saga, Breaking Dawn Part 1, you get to see it on Monday. It comes out a week from Friday. Our event's going to be at the LA Live, and we'll give you a chance to win those. You can go to KROQ.com for all the more details and your chance to win in less than 1 hour. Is that Adam Sessler from X-Play on G4 that I don't think I've seen since Comic-Con? How are you, Adam?
Yeah, I'm doing well. How are you?
It's been a while since we've seen you, my friend.
I know. It's been a little bit busy with, you know, games and stuff like that happening.
Like you do, exactly. You have been in the man cave. I still don't know how you're able to keep a family, but you have been in the man cave putting in more than the 168 hours that exist in a week to try to review all the new games coming out for the holidays, right?
Yeah, it's been a little bit tough. Ever so often, I kind of forget where I am, who I am, and why I am. It is a little, you know, strange, but, you know, I'm doing it for the kids. That's my big sacrifice.
Of course it is, like Santa. On the news last night, I was watching the late news here in Seattle, and they showed a line of people who were out in front of a GameStop, and I'm sure this was repeated all over the country, maybe all over the world if it's same-day release, but they were camped out for Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. And I made a mention a minute ago. They're expecting this thing to sell $1.1 billion worth of games between now and Christmas. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, that sounds about right. I mean, it's a massive number. I mean, this franchise has reached, it's kind of like the Super Bowl, where people buy it. I don't know if anyone who buys it is necessarily a hardcore fan, but it's become so essential a moment in just kind of, you know, living in Western society that you just have to get the game, and Activision is just cashing in on that perfectly.
Do they, I mean, look, it would be very easy to coast when you have a title as popular as this, but the impression I get in the past is that everyone is worth getting and everyone has made significant improvements over the previous.
I mean, yeah, they are very strong games, and this is a surprising improvement over some previous ones. There's a lot of drama surrounding this game because Modern Warfare 2, which came out 2 years ago, was made by a group called Infinity Ward, and they are still the same ones that are making Modern Warfare 3, but they lost a lot of the staff. There's some lawsuits and the heads of that group and a lot of their employees moved on to a new company called Respawn. And so there's a lot of speculation as to whether or not this could continue, you know, the franchise, and it looks like it has. In fact, where Call of Duty has been lacking in past years has been in this single-player campaign. It always looks really pretty, but sometimes it's a little less incoherent, and it looks like they really have stepped up to the plate and made a really fun single-player game. And, of course, the bulk of it is that multiplayer. They've returned to the form of Modern Warfare 2 and not like last year's Black Ops, and it just has those small little improvements that make it better. It's always it's a very tricky balance. They can never change it too much because you're going to alienate that fan base, but then again, they have to make it different to make a case for why you're buying it. So they seem to have hit that nice sweet spot. I don't know if it's going to bring in that many new people, but the multiplayer is a little bit more friendly to people that, you know, aren't that skilled. It allows you to just play over an extended period of time and get better and get good things for your character.
It seems so old school to have the Russians be the enemy, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, but it's also good in PC.
That's true. You don't want to pick anyone that anyone could think we're serious about, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, these games, they get made over a 2-year period. You don't know what's really going to happen in the world 2 years later, and, you know, you don't want to find yourself in a very, very bad situation. I think, and obviously, the way that the Russians are at war with everybody in this is because of a deception and some crazy people. It's pretty far removed from anything that could possibly happen.
Right.
Yeah. I think they're wiser for that. If you play the news too much, I think it starts to feel a little bit crass and say, hold on, I'm having fun, but this is kind of an unpleasant
political
situation.
Almost, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What was there much of a reaction? I mean, look, we've seen not a lot, but a handful of pretty successful movies done about Iraq and Afghanistan over the past 10 years. Did that happen in the game world as well?
Just a little bit. I mean, there have been attempts. I think there is, for a lot of people out there, a sense of unease, since games are kind of predicated on a sense of fun, that if you bring it too close to something that really shouldn't be fun and that people really are losing their lives over it, that, it's a little bit uncomfortable. There was one attempt that I thought was quite interesting. It was called 6 Days in Fallujah. It never got made, but it was being made by a group that actually contracted with the military, and they were using Marines that were in the siege of Fallujah to kind of use the game format to give average people a sense of what they endured, what they went through, and how you really do have to function in a wartime experience. When you play a lot of these video games, you're just a one-man killing machine. That's not how the military operates. And I really admire their attempt to try to do that, but there was so much outcry because it was a game, and they thought they were exploiting things, that the publisher just backed off.
There has to be a Navy SEALs game going after Osama bin Laden at some point, though, doesn't there? I mean, everybody wants to be that guy who pulls that trigger.
Well, I mean, there are games where you play Navy SEALs. I would not be surprised if, yes, there's going to be elements. Now that there's a story with a happy ending,
right,
I think it's a little bit easier to then make that into a game.
This is the voice of Adam Sessler, our friend from X-Play on G4, talking about some of the big games. Of course, we just mentioned Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, which is out today. Uncharted 3, Drake's Deception, also out this week. This one's for PS3 only. Now, this is the rapper who wears the sweaters, right? That's what we're talking about?
Exactly. It's all about that. No, it's a follow-up to Uncharted 2, which I modestly called the greatest single-player game I had ever played. It comes out two years later, and it's still a very fine game. It is just a technical masterpiece. I mean, it's the parts that you don't play that are telling the story, when they then move into the parts that you do play, it's seamless, and it gives this wonderful cinematic feeling of getting sort of trapped in this really fun Indiana Jones-style adventure story. I did not care for this one as much as I did the first one, primarily because it's only been 2 years, and the second game was such a seminal achievement that it didn't look like that there was enough time to figure out where to go in a different direction. The game's a lot of fun to play, but it kind of feels too reminiscent of the amazing instances of gameplay that you had in Uncharted 2, and it just didn't get my heart beating as much as it did with the other one. Unfortunately, this then made me the biggest pariah out there on the internet, because sometimes you do these reviews and you get to post them before the game actually comes out. So with no one out there to actually check against my experience, right, I suddenly found myself the most hated man on Twitter. And it's interesting, because 10-year-olds have a stronger vocabulary than I thought.
All right, one more before the break. And I know we have, Adam, so many to talk about here today, but Battlefield 3 is another one that is just, yes, multi-million seller out of the gate. What's the deal here?
Well, okay, so this is from Electronic Arts, which would be the chief rival to Activision that makes Call of Duty. They've always had this really cool franchise called Battlefield that's really been a multiplayer game, and one that really forces a lot of team play, and it has lots of vehicles, and it's always a fun one because interesting things happen when people can fly planes and drive tanks, and they're all working together. And sometimes it can be really funny. It can be really, challenging. They're really trying to step to the plate and say, okay, we can take Call of Duty. In fact, in their marketing campaign, they said above the call. I mean, they've been very aggressive in their marketing to attack Call of Duty. The multiplayer, absolutely great. It's actually my preferred multiplayer of the military form. The single player, on the other hand, is beautiful and has absolutely no life in it whatsoever. It's one of the strangest experiences I've had, that I've told young kids that want to make games, like, play this and figure out what went wrong. Because when you look at the screen, you're like, this should be really exciting, and I can't get my heart to just pound. And it's
but you can't put your finger on why?
Well, what seems to be happening is that in order to make the game look this good, it didn't allow the artificial intelligence of the enemies and the people that look like they're playing with you to be dynamic. And so everything happens in a very set way. Mm. And I think on a more subliminal level, it takes the life out of the game, because you don't get that sense that there's something happening due to what you're doing. You're just kind of doing a whack-a-mole. And as long as you shoot the right guy, the bad guys won't come over the wall anymore.
You're a tough room. I mean, we have this conversation all the time about critics. If your job is to watch every movie, you do have a different standard of entertainment level. And I wonder if that's the case with you. Not that you're wrong. It's just that your personal experience is going to be different than people who don't play 500 different games a year, right?
No. And then obviously with games costing $60, I don't think anyone likes to feel like they made a bad decision. And so they're going to try to defend it. And I think what's unfortunate, and this is very true for video games and because of the internet, that it's just that evaluation that people seem to care about. Is it good? Is it bad? And that's somehow going to be a validation of me and my purchasing decision. What criticism should be is to open up a discussion that, kind of helps the creativity inside of the industry. And people seem to be just so fixated on, is it good? Is it bad? Does it work? Does it not work? That I think we're really losing something. I think the game industry itself suffers as a result.
Adam Sessler is here in studio. He is, of course, the host and executive producer. Is that what the title was?
No, I think it's editor-in-chief.
Editor-in-chief, I couldn't remember, of the show X-Play on G4 with new episodes weekdays at 3:30 on the G4 network. When we return, we want to talk about the new Batman game since the last time we saw you, which has just done gangbuster business as well, the Arkham City. And also we're going to talk about Gears of War 3, and I know you've got a lot of things to say about those right after this on the Kevin and Bean Show. Adam Sessler is here on the Kevin and Bean Show on the world-famous K-Rock from G4's X-Play. Adam, when was, we're talking off the air, I have to ask, when was the last time you read a book, or is reading for losers, do you think?
No, actually, I read pretty frequently. It just doesn't. It just. I think I lose credibility when I say that too much in public. But yeah, I was an English major over at UCLA, so I do unfortunately have an affinity for the written word.
How are you wasting your life then doing video games?
Yeah, my parents were like, "We paid for college."
Yeah,
right.
What are you doing?
What are you doing exactly? All right. If you're just joining us, we've talked about Battlefield 3. We talked about the new Uncharted 3, and of course, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, which is the biggie that's in stores everywhere today. Arkham City has come out since the last time we had you on. Before you talk about that, the new Batman game, how is it that Batman is now the biggest superhero in the world, and why are there not more Superman video games?
Because the principles of Superman, I think, make it not just hard for a video game, it makes it hard to make a movie. He's completely invincible. So how do you find a viable challenge where you could potentially die in a video game? I mean, in addition, it's the flying mechanics can still be a little bit tricky how you sort of do that. One of the most notorious video games ever made, called Superman 64, is widely considered among the worst. And it really is. I mean, it couldn't play. It was pretty much broken. And in the very beginning, Lex Luthor is so evil that he makes you fly through rings that are suspended in midair. And
it didn't really work.
No. Batman, on the other hand, he's cool. He's also, he's human, and so he does have that vulnerability, and there's that level of ingenuity how Batman gets through problems with his gadgets and with his detective skills. That works really well in a video game format.
And the world of Arkham City, I haven't played it, of course, but the world of Arkham City is like the kind of the gritty, intense Gotham City of the current series of Batman films, right?
Yeah.
It's dark.
It doesn't feel exactly like the Batman films. It really is its own thing, and it's really cool. The idea is that Gotham now has taken a section of the city and turned it into a prison. It's like Escape from New York. And Bruce Wayne has been thrown in there, and like all the villains that you have ever thought about from Batman are in there, and you just kind of have this open world adventure just flying and gliding through. I mean, one of the true pleasures of this game is just gliding down, seeing bad guys, swooping in and just beating them silly. And it just never gets boring. It is really an amazing accomplishment, because superhero games tend to be really bad. They usually just spend all their money on getting the license, and this is written by people who do work on the comic books. Like, DC was very, very involved, and it is that Batman fantasy. If you're not a fan of Batman, it probably isn't going to work for you, but you should be a fan of Batman. So, you know, it should work for you.
The reviews have been just through the roof, too. I mean, people are just loving this game. Gears of War 3 is another one. I can't believe how many big games have come out since the last time we talked to you, Adam. This one sold over 3 million copies in its first week. It was released in September, I guess.
Yes.
You're a fan.
Yes, I've always liked the Gears of War series. It was always almost there. Like, there's so much that's good about it. I have called it one of the most significant games of this generation, because it introduced the idea of using cover and sort of sticking to an object and then kind of poking your head out to shoot the bad guys, rather than kind of the old style of shooting games, which was, I'm just going to walk like a sociopath down this hallway shooting everything that comes at me. Right. And it allows for a lot more thought in how the combat plays out. But there was always, like, maybe the story didn't, like, completely come together, or some of the mechanics. Gears of War 3, for me, really does all come together, and it's a very nice way to end this kind of three-part trilogy of these various characters. It's a far more interesting world that they show in this one than they have in the previous two, and it's absolutely gorgeous. Obviously, if you weren't a fan of the first two, I don't know if this is going to make you a convert, and you probably will be very confused by what's going on in it, but it's really nice to see it finally kind of reach that level that I knew it always could.
All right, let's try to squeeze in one more before we have to go, and that is for PlayStation 3 only, also out since September, Resistance 3.
Yes, I wanted to bring this one up because I think it got a little bit under the radar because of Gears of War and all these other games coming out. It is a PlayStation-only game. I love this game. The single player, it controls so well. It just has a tone that feels different from a lot of the other stuff that's out there on the market. It is a third part, but it is its own story in this America that's now in the 1960s that seems to be invaded by aliens. And there's a lot of despair in this game, But it is really an amazing experience. I just wanted to encourage people out there that may not be aware of its availability, that it's really a good sleeper out there.
Why does somebody make a game for one console only at this point? Why not just take the time and money or whatever is required to debut it everywhere at the same time?
Well, Microsoft and Sony and Nintendo obviously have an investment in their particular console. And so they will either own the developer that's making the game, or they have a contractual agreement so that they have some type of signature game that will help define what this console is, so that people will buy a PlayStation 3 over an Xbox 360.
Right, but some things come out across all platforms, don't they?
Right, those are from the companies like EA and Activision. That, you know, it is more financially sensible to try to make it as available to everyone as possible, and that's why Call of Duty can sell over $1 billion worth of games.
Mm. Yeah, because everyone can play.
It's never going to happen, even for a game like Halo, as popular as it is, because it only works on that one system.
So many people are now playing on their phones or on their iPads, even on their the laptops or desktops. Are we going to get to a point where it's an ever shrinking market of the actual home units that you have in your living room?
This is the big discussion. I don't think so. I do play Angry Birds or something like that, but I do it when I'm like in a hospital waiting room. It's because I don't want to interact with other people. It's not because I actually want to derive some pleasure out of that game in that moment.
And it's just kind of mindless.
Yeah, it's really, you know, probably because there's things I can't do in public I'd rather be doing, and so I'll just play Angry Birds. And I think what you get at the home is something that's more like going to see a movie. It is an interesting, evocative experience. I think the two can coexist. I do worry sometimes that, you know, industry leaders think that there's this gold rush in all these small games, and they don't really understand that why Angry Birds became popular doesn't make any sense, and it's not like you can actually predict when that's going to happen again.
Right. Gotcha. Excellent point. You can follow Adam Sessler on the Twitter, and you should, at Adam Sessler and G4TV/XPlay. And, of course, you can watch him afternoons at 3:30 on the G4 network. Adam, always great to catch up with you, my friend.
Good
if we
to
don't
be here.
See you before the holidays, man, happy one to you, and thanks for everything.
Thanks.
Hey, thanks for coasting along with us. We appreciate it. I'm Ted Ziegenbusch.
So we are in the station that everyone can agree on at work. I do know that. What was that? What were we playing, Rear Bugs? I'm not paying attention.
Path of Least Resistance.
That was Promises, then, Promises.
Promises, Promises. Mm-hmm.
Is that by our little Incubus friends?
Or
who is that by?
Yes.
Oh, how about that? Nice, all right.
It's a very soothing song. I'm just saying it's a soothing song.
It is. How about some Twilight Saga Breaking Dawn Part 1? How about that?
Oh! Yes.
How about going on Monday rather than waiting till the end of next week when the movie is available for the rest of us on Friday, November 18th? If you are a Twilight fan...
You're saying Monday like it's any Monday, like it's any other Monday. Just go see it on Monday.
Yes.
You're burying the lead.
What? I'm saying this Monday is the red carpet world premiere with the stars.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Okay, well,
red
one of those...
Red carpet world premiere, you get to be with our pet and the girl...
K-Stu,
and the
right?
dog, all of them.
T-Lot, right. Yes. So all of them, right. T-Lot. So if you're a Twilight fan and you have great Twilight trivia, we haven't tried this before, but our Rob Pattinson is in the next room, and he's going to be coming in to take your questions.
He's dreamy.
Can you stump Rob Pattinson with Twilight trivia? You've seen the movies. You've read the books. We want to hear from you. 1-800-520-1067. If you can stump Rob, you or stump Edward or whatever we're calling the stupid game, you can win your way in to join us for the red carpet world premiere. That's coming up next on the Kevin and Bean Show. First, Rob is here with the Showbiz Beat.
This time the baby comes in the movie.
Yeah.
Now they're having a twi baby.
I hear that's something else, too, that scene.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about showbiz news. I just got some showbiz news from Bean. This is just word of mouth, from his mouth to my mouth. Wait a minute, that sounds gross. From his mouth to my ears. But I really want to talk about the Duggars real quick, because I hadn't heard, and Bean just filled me in. Bean, what's
this? This is a crazy family in Georgia that has 19 kids, those guys?
This is the TLC show, I guess it is. It's on
that's
TLC.
That's right.
They have all the kids, and the kids are raising kids, and there's kids within kids. They're like those Russian nesting dolls. There's just like, you just open one up, and there's another one inside of it. But I heard there's breaking news today about the Duggars.
They made an appearance, all of them and the entire family, on the Today Show on NBC Today, where they announced that the mom, the chief hoarder, is pregnant with child.
Yay! Come on! Wasn't the last one like premature and near death and stuff?
Yes, they had some issues, medical issues with the last one. But you know what their thing is, and I could have written this interview that they did today. Their thing is, we're just grateful however many children God wants to give us. We consider them all gifts and blah, 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 blah.
God gave you free will. You know what that means? You can close your legs once in a while.
Nope.
Damn.
And didn't you hear she's on the elliptical now, like every day? So she's in great shape. I don't know what that does to your uterus, but apparently something.
It's Michelle and Jim. I'm looking now. They're expecting their 20th child. They announced just this morning. We are so excited, they said. By the way, I was not thinking that God would give us another one, but we are just so grateful. Forget the fact that she's already had 19 kids pushed out of that vagina, okay? She is also 45 years old.
Yeah.
At some point, like Lisa said, you're going to start inviting trouble with those children that you're having.
And the elliptical isn't going to help you. You need to start doing bench presses with your ovaries or something. Mm-hmm. It's the insides that count. Oh, come on with the 20 kids. We don't see. Where's Bob Barker now? Where's the spay and neuter message now? Where's the spokesperson for this? Where we can stop this?
I wonder how. I mean, she's been pregnant way more time than she's not been pregnant as an adult. If she's on her 20th kid, right?
And you know what she's doing the other time when she's not pregnant? Apparently, humping, getting pregnant.
Her eldest, Ralph, I'm seeing here, is 23 years old. The youngest is 23 months old. They are Joshua, Jaina, John David, Jill, Jessa, Jinger.
Wait a minute. Jinger?
Jinger.
There's no Jinger.
Joseph, Josiah, Joanna, Jedediah, Jeremiah, Jason, James, Justin, Jackson, Joanna, Jennifer, Jordan, Grace, and Josie. Those are the kids' names.
What about
jail? There's no jail, no. And there's no Jinger either. Jinger.
One of the kids' name is Jinger. Michelle and I feel like some of the most blessed parents in the world, says Jim Bob. Our children are so sweet. We are so grateful to God. Plus, we didn't want to stop on an odd number. So there you go. He's got a sense of humor.
Jim Bob.
God.
What? Look, I know we live in America and the government is not China. The government doesn't come in and tell you how many kids you can have. But at some point, start taking them away from this family, right?
Well, listen, the problem is if you watch the show, by all accounts, they've got their weird little world in order. I mean, the older kids raise the other kids and homeschool them and they seem to do their chores and stuff. It's not like the Octomom where you go into the house and it looks like, you know, a baby exploded in there with poop everywhere and food and crayons and stuff. I mean, they keep a well-ordered household by all accounts.
The kids were all on the TV for the announcement today, and they all seemed polite and healthy and clean and well-mannered. So maybe they know what they're doing, but I
there's something very wrong about it.
Yeah, there is.
The good news is I just got this in. This is just handed to me by our staff that they are going to have the 20th baby on Life Changers with Dr. Jill. Yeah! They will perform the delivery right there live in front of a studio audience on Dr. Drew's Life Changers. So.
We got to talk to Jigger, right?
It's Jinger. Did you say it's Jinger?
Like Jigger.
Singer with a J?
Oh, is it Jigger? I couldn't remember. Yeah, we got to talk to Jigger.
Jinger.
Yeah, I think it is Jigger. Yeah, we got to talk to him or her.
Jeremiah, by the way, is a bullfrog.
Oh, my God!
Wow. He's not a good-looking kid. That's what I'm saying. He's not a
I understand.
Kid. Yeah. While we're talking about Dr. Drew's Life Changers, Kate Major was on that show yesterday. She is the on-again, off-again girlfriend of Michael Lowen, who is currently doing time for assaulting her. Well, it looks like Kate has some anger issues of her own to work out. She was popped Sunday night at LAX. She was on a plane seated in first class, had an exchange of words with another passenger, and then it came to blows. She started taking swings and had to be removed from the aircraft. Police arrived on scene and issued her a citation for misdemeanor battery. She was on her way to Florida to attend a court proceeding regarding the restraining order against Michael Lowen. So there's a lot of violence in her life. And it looks like she's responsible for at least some of it, if not the Michael Lowen part.
Yeah.
Still. She's a nut loaf, too. I don't know if you watched that Dr. Drew show, but I think today might be a cheater's court. We might have to tape Dr. Drew again today. I think he's behind the bench with his judge's robe on, banging a gavel at two porn stars.
What's
who are having relationships problems.
What happened to Drew?
And I think Niecy Nash is his bailiff or something. I forget. There's some female African-American comedian who is his hilarious bailiff. It's like a sketch on Saturday Night Live. By the way, we don't give Saturday Night Live much credit around here because they don't deserve it. But do yourself a favor. If you get a chance, go online and find the Kardashian video that was on the show Saturday night.
It was very funny, wasn't it?
It is beyond just funny. It is brilliantly written and performed and edited. It is one of the finest pieces of satire I've seen in a long, long time. They really did a great job.
Wow, that hurts you to say that about SNL.
It does. Trust me. I've been struggling with it since I saw it. But it is remarkable. Remarkably well done.
All right, here's the 1-2 punch. Funny. Here's the 1-2 punch. I know we're out of time, Ralph, but Dr. Drew at 3 today on the CW has obese women paid to film their lives.
Yes!
They're like 800 pounds, right?
Yeah, and they're, I mean, they're shaking their moneymakers for their fans.
Exactly, yeah. That's at 3. And then at 3:30 is a couple working in adult films.
Yes!
That's the Cheaters on Trial. So we got both
Cheaters
of those
court!
Today.
Cheaters Court!
Yep.
Oh.
We're
going to have to do a daily update on Life Changers.
I think we should.
Yeah.
Guess what they're calling the episode at 3:30 today.
I don't know.
Cheaters on Trial with Judge Drudy.
Yay!
Judge Drudy.
All right. I'm getting a team together in a van. We're going to go kidnap Drew. We're going to save him from himself.
No! No!
Today's celebrity birthdays. Look them up yourself. We're out of time. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz.
Apparently, Jinger... I'm being informed by the listeners, one of the Duggan's 20 kids is pronounced Ginger, Lisa. They spell it Jinger because it has to start with a J, but they pronounce it Ginger. So I didn't know. And maybe it's a girl. I don't know.
I hate them so much.
I hate them so, too.
I do, too.
Oh, hi, Rob Pattinson from the Twilight movies. How are you, sir?
Yeah.
I'm just kind of slunk in here.
You're listening to the world-famous K-Rock. I thought you would be traveling with an entourage. You just came in by yourself. What's going on?
Oftentimes when I'm traveling, especially here in Los Angeles, I have to leave my entourage behind because I want to blend in.
Mm-hmm. Was that the end of that sentence? All right. Well, the reason you're here is because we have tickets to the red carpet world premiere with you and with your beautiful girlfriend, co-star Kimberly. Is that her name? Kimberly? What's her name?
Who? Which one?
Catherine, what's her name? The chick from the movie? Kristen. Kristen, that's it. Yes.
You mean
thanks for your help, Lisa. Short.
Angry McNoboobs?
Exactly. That's the one. Ashley Green, of course, Taylor Lautner, Dakota Fanning, they'll all be there. If you want to be on the red carpet with the stars to see the movie ahead of anyone else, call right now, 1-800-520-1067. If you have Twilight trivia, it's time to stump Edward.
Can you stump Edward? Can you stump Edward? Let's all stump Edward.
Vampire. So Rob, you are apparently, you not only act in the movies, but you know every detail about every book and every film. You are a fountain of information about Twilight trivia. Am I correct?
I'm a fountain of many things, Lisa May. I hope you know what I mean. But when it comes to Twilight, I know everything. I had to research the role. I had to get into character.
Take it very seriously.
The method.
Okay. Let's go to Gene on line 2 to get us started here. If you've got a Twilight question, if you are able to stump Rob Pattinson, you go into the drawing to win tickets for the Red Carpet World Premiere. We only have room for 2 winners today. Gene, you're on with RPATS. Go ahead.
Hi, RPATS. Hi, Lisa May.
Hello.
Hi. I was calling to find out if you knew when Edward's human birth date is.
You know, you sure sound fat, don't you?
Why would you say something like that at all?
Put down the bread pudding there, Gene. All right, next call.
She's asking. Oh, how about an answer?
Or when was his human born?
420. All right.
Is it 420, Gene?
No, it's not.
What is the actual correct answer?
It's June 20, 1901.
June 29. Okay, so you stumped our pets. You are in the drawing. Yeah. Thank you for calling. You hang
so
on. I don't
look
think
like
you sound
this.
Fat at all.
I look like this, but I was born before the First World War.
Because you're a vampire. You stopped aging when you changed into a vampire.
Oh, silly.
Come on, pay attention. Pay attention to your own goddamn movie.
Not really good.
All right,
you know what I research? Ashley Green's panty drawer smells like cinnamon. Booyah.
Okay, let's move on to Sarah, please, line 4. By the way, this won't surprise anyone. All ladies on the phone are Pats. You're very popular with the women. They all want to come see you in Twilight.
You're goddamn right.
Sarah, welcome to the show. Stump Hi. Robert Pattinson.
Who was, in the first book, who was Bella's first date?
Otto von Bismarck.
What am I talking about? There's no character by that name.
Isn't he a world, wasn't he a World War One war figure? Or
and the last question I mentioned World War One, so it spurred on the thoughts of World War One, and I thought about Otto von Bismarck, and what a sharp-dressed fella he was. All right, Sarah,
is it Otto von Bismarck?
No.
Who was it?
Mike.
It was Mike. Okay, well, that's well done. All right, all you're right. In the drawing. Hang on. It was Mike.
They're really getting creative with the character names, aren't they?
Well, I really like this guy, Mike.
Let's go to Melissa. Melissa is on line six. She's got a great question for you. She's a Twilight fan. Melissa, you're on with our pets. Go ahead.
Yes. I was just wondering, where did you get your engagement ring for Bella?
Mike.
Okay, no. Mike was the answer to the last one. Robert, where did you get your engagement ring? I think they're looking for a store
Brothers.
Or person. Was it Robbins Brothers, Melissa?
No. You got it from your mother.
From your mom?
Yeah,
you don't remember that from the movie? Come on, our pets.
Oh, yeah. You know, I film these movies, and it kind of just slips out of my head. I have other projects on my mind. Got to go on to the next one. It was Water for Elephants. And
sure.
Got a couple other projects in my...
Mm-hmm. Melissa, right. You hang on. Thank you. Let's do one more.
Big head on that Reese Witherspoon. It's like a pumpkin.
Really?
I remember I saw O.J. Simpson at a bar once, and I was like, big head on you. And I saw the same thing when I first met Reese Witherspoon. I said, big, massive head.
Huh,
put down the steroids, you big-headed freak.
Interesting story. Let's try Crystal. We've just got time for one more here. So far, I have to be honest, you have not impressed me with your knowledge of Twilight trivia, Rob.
Well said.
Crystal, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Hi, Lisa May.
Hi, Crystal.
Sorry. I'm at work, so I'm sorry if I'm talking low.
Okay.
Not a problem. It's kind of sexy.
What's Renee Esmé's middle name?
Renee Esmé.
Do you even know who Renee Esmé is?
They were in DeBarge, right?
No, not DeBarge.
Renee Esbe, Ube, Eichel May. I'm going to go with Balzini.
Is it Balzini, Crystal?
No, it's Carly.
It's Carly. Oh, Crystal, do you want to come to this red carpet world premiere with the stars, see the movie early?
Heck yeah, that's why I'm at work talking low and trying not to get my new boss.
Where do you work?
All right.
Where do you work?
We don't have time for this. All right. Put her on hold. You are in the drawing. Unfortunately, you were stumped by all four of our listeners, but only two can attend. Lisa May, who are the two winners, please?
It is Melissa and Crystal.
All right, Melissa. Let's go to Melissa real quick, because I know she's going to be excited. Melissa, you're going.
Melissa?
Oh, my God.
Okay. There she is. All right, you hang on. We won't make the same mistake by going to Crystal. Rob, I hope you have a fantastic time at the premiere. I hope the movie is very, very successful for you. Thanks for coming down the Kevin and Bean Show.
Oh, I hope you die.
Can you stump Edward?
It's the world-famous K-Rock 106.7 KROQ. Rob's got the showbiz beat coming up again in just a couple of minutes. There was, I don't think, much surprise, Lisa, when the verdict was read around 1 p.m. West Coast time that Dr. Conrad Murray found guilty of manslaughter, killing Michael Jackson. You weren't surprised, right?
Not a bit.
I mean, about 3 days into the prosecution's case, I thought, how's he ever going to come back from this? And he didn't. And, of course, TMZ.com has been all over this story for what seems like years now. And our friend Mike Walters joins us on the phone from the TMZ newsroom right now. Hey, Mike, how are you, man?
Good. And, yes, it has been years.
It does seem like it's been years.
Actual years. Yeah, it actually has.
So you weren't surprised. You agree with me, right? I mean, this was not a foregone conclusion, but it would have been a shocking upset if he had not been convicted based on the preponderance of the evidence, right?
Yeah, we actually prepared for it to be several hours of deliberations. I mean, we were ready to go. We were prepping our newsroom and all of our technology and stuff we needed to use to do it because we thought it'd be the same day. I mean, I think it went longer than I thought. I mean, if you watch that trial, which, by the way, it was some of the parts were so boring. But if you did watch all of it, it was very obvious to most people that the defense had struggled most of the time and that the prosecution, this Walgren guy, I mean, he blazed right through it. I mean, it was pretty obvious to most people that watched that he was going to be guilty.
Yeah, and they deliberated for a full day and then part of another day before they came back. And what I was surprised, a couple of things have happened since the verdict was read that I was surprised about. One of which is, and you broke this on TMZ also, what kind of special hold is going on Dr. Murray right now in prison?
Well, it's weird. You know, several media outlets reported that he was on suicide watch, which is not true. What basically it is when you're put into the jail and they do go through the booking process. One of the most dangerous parts of jail is the holding cells. When you first go in, it's where they're trying to house you in the proper location. Let's say you're a gang member. They want to get you in the right place that you're not in danger. Well, Conrad Murray's in that process right now of being his background being done to figure out where he's going to be, obviously in a solitary cell. Well, what happened was he ended up in the medical ward, the medical wing of the jail, and the reason that we're told they did that is because there's more deputies there. It's out of convenience for them because he's an inmate where he needs a 24-hour-a-day escort. Anywhere he goes in the jail, he has some danger, so he has to be escorted by a deputy. In the medical ward, there's the most deputies per inmate ratio, so that's why they put him in there.
Are celebrities sometimes at risk because the other inmates anticipate them coming and may have their own opinions about what they've done? I mean, there could easily be fans of Michael Jackson in the prison population who would be really pissed off and look forward to an opportunity to hit Dr. Conrad Murray in the face, right?
Absolutely. Well, I don't want to hit him in the face, but I mean, you're 100% right. There's definitely more risk to celebrities in jail. It's like Paris Hilton, Lindsay Lohan, when they go to jail, when they were in jail, they definitely kept them in a solitary area away from other inmates. I mean, and the reason it really is because the inmates who are there, a lot of times in jail, the mantra is, if you can do something that gets you notoriety within the jail, within the gang population, whoever like cares about all that, it's not necessarily, you know, people that hate Dr. Murray because of what he did to Michael. It's just people who want to make a scene, people that want to make a name for themselves. That's the biggest danger when he goes to jail. But, you know, Murray, I think, was preparing to go to jail. Like you said, I think him out of anyone knew that this was happening. We actually found out he went to church earlier that day and the day before, you know, kind of just saying, okay, I'm going to have some bad stuff happen to me in the next couple of days. I need to prepare for this.
This is the voice of our friend Mike Walters here on the Kevin Bean Show from the TMZ.com newsroom. So sentencing is going to be what, at the end of the month, right after Thanksgiving, right? And what is expected to happen there?
Well, I think this part is going to be the one where people, MJ fans, get really upset. Because, you know, it was a major victory for people who are Michael Jackson fans that feel that Dr. Murray was responsible. The problem is that Dr. Murray, because of the new California law that went into effect in October, he is what they call a nonviolent felon. The crime that he committed doesn't fall into the area where you do state prison time. He'll be going to a county jail, like Los Angeles County, where he is now. The other problem is because of overcrowding, if he gets the maximum sentence for the crime that he committed, would be 4 years. And automatically, because of overcrowding and what they call good time, work time, he'll do half that. So it'll be 2 years, right? But then, even worse for the people that you know, will be upset about this, he's eligible for house arrest almost immediately after that. Dr. Murray could end up on house arrest and not doing very much jail time at all for this. And I think if that happens, people will be really upset that are fans of Michael.
Unbelievable. He has lost his medical license. He will never practice medicine again, Mike, or what?
Well, it's automatic, from what I'm told, when you are convicted of this sort of crime. The issue is after sentencing, the medical board has to file the proper paperwork. Once that happens, he can fight it, but yeah, I don't think that you have much of a shot since you were convicted of killing somebody in an improper medical setting and the stuff that he did with the protocol.
Right.
I don't think he has much of a shot. The problem that people are going to have, again, is that I think it's only for California. And Houston, Texas, and Las Vegas, Nevada have to agree and or, you know, use the conviction here and the loss of medical license over there. So it's possible that he can practice medicine in another state.
Wow. All right. Last question for you, Mike, and you're very kind to carve out some time for us. Of course, immediately almost after the verdict was announced yesterday, Dr. Conrad Murray's attorney said, yeah, we're going to appeal. Is there anything that any experts are saying who watched this trial that leaves the door open for any judge to agree to an appeal?
Well, everybody who's convicted of a crime in the state of California has the right to appeal. So he has the right to file an appeal. It's then just basically if any appellate judge agrees to hear some of the case, it depends on what they'll bring into that case, into that those hearings. You know, to be honest, all you're hoping for when you appeal a case like this is that there's somebody out there, an appellate judge, another group of people that agree with you, that maybe he wasn't guilty. That's all.
Yeah.
It's kind of like throwing a dart and going, hopefully it lands in the middle.
Yeah, because it's not like those of us who watched some of the trial saw a glaring error, for instance, that was made, you know, that would leave the door open for that. All right, yeah. Last question. How are you guys going to handle this over at TMZ? I mean, you don't have Dr. Conrad Murray to kick around anymore. What are you going to be doing?
Well, I was just going to say, I got to run because it's actually our sixth anniversary today, TMZ.com.
Yeah. 6 years. Congratulations.
And we've got an omelet bar in the back, so I'm going to go eat an omelet.
There you go. Ladies and gentlemen, the omelet bar. That's nice.
The rest of the day.
Mike, have a great one. Give Harvey our best congratulations as well. And thanks for coming on the Kevin DeBeach Show.
All right, guys. See ya.
It's the world-famous K-Rock, 106.7 KROQ. Thanks a lot for tuning in to the Kevin and Bean Show here on a Tuesday, but we're not done yet. Ralph is in for one more look at the showbiz beat. What's going on?
Sad news. Last night, many of us were watching the Monday Night Football game when we found out that Joe Frazier had died of liver cancer after a brief fight at the age of 76 years old. For those of you who never got a chance to see him fight, one of the great heavyweight champs of all time, the Frazier-Ali fights were three classics, and the George Foreman fight was pretty strong, too. Frazier, one of the best left hooks in the business.
A lot of those are out on DVD, right?
Yeah, and they're worth checking out, man. It is accomplishments that have really stood the test of time, those guys, those heavyweights back in that division back in the day. So sad news that he passed away, especially since he was beloved in my home city of Philadelphia. He was sort of our adopted real-life Rocky there. He lived in Philly for many years.
But he died before the Monday Night Football game last night, so he didn't have to see that.
How dare you, sir! Ugh. That
had to hurt. That one hurt.
The game was brutal.
You hate to be in a lead like that in the fourth quarter.
Penalties and turnovers. Just gave it away. Sad news. While we're talking about giving it away, porn star Kim Kardashian left Los Angeles for Minnesota last weekend. She flew to Chris Humphrey's hometown, leading to speculation that perhaps there was a rapprochement in the works. But no, in fact, Kim, sources close to Kim say that she went to Chris's hometown simply to apologize to his family. Sources say she is deeply embarrassed and sad by that TV special they put on about their wedding. No, about the divorce. So
I hope they filmed that. God, I want to see how she would apologize. Look,
I had the opportunity
to make a lot.
And I ruined your lives and made you embarrassed because I didn't take marriage with Chris seriously.
I had the opportunity to make a lot of money on a television special, and I needed somebody to play my groom for a short amount of time, and I chose your son, and I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, we talked about it last hour, but if you get a chance, check out the Saturday Night Live video parodying the Kardashian TV series and the divorce. Very, very funny stuff. Kristen Stewart. We were just talking to her boyfriend, Rob Pattinson.
Our Pats?
On the show, and she really has him wrapped around her finger, according to sources. Us Weekly magazine says she will sometimes not return his calls for days at a time until he's just beside himself, and that forces him to come visit her wherever she is and check in with her. So she manipulates him.
Why would you play games with a long-term steady beau like that?
Because that's how you keep men interested, Bean. Don't you read Cosmo?
I guess not.
He's often on the set of Snow White and the Huntsman, the new movie that she's making, and they say he's sitting around all the time waiting for her to finish filming so they can get some time together.
Hmm. Lisa, how would it go in your relationship with your boyfriend if you just stopped responding to his emails and phone calls for 4 or 5 days?
I think he would show up my door to tell me to go to hell, and that would be that.
Kick rocks, baby girl. That's what he would say to you. But when you're the lovely and talented Kristen Stewart with that kind of vivacious personality,
you can get away with
stunning
that.
Beauty, you can get away with anything. Interesting movie news. Universal has announced they're working on a film about young Leonardo da Vinci. Finally, because the kids love Da Vinci.
Sure.
They can't get enough. This will be an exciting, action-packed backstory about Leonardo and how he grew up to become the painter of the Mona Lisa and The Last Supper, and how he came up with the first drawings of a helicopter and a tank, conceived solar power, the calculator. He was a smart dude. Now you can see him in high school going to the prom, designing a corsage.
And being a dick, right?
No, he was great.
He had to be the smartest guy in the room. He's probably a smug a-hole.
I'm guessing what they're going to do is make him, like, fight crime and stuff, and he'll have to, like, invent weapons and things. I'm sure they're going to make it just a big farce out of the whole thing.
Right.
So, that isn't as bad as Where's Waldo, the movie? MGM has optioned the rights to make a live-action movie based on the popular Where's Waldo kids book series. For those of you who have never seen Where's Waldo, it's where you open up a book and then you just look for Waldo. Because there's a lot of people drawn on the pages and he is hidden in there. And that's going to be a movie.
Their movies are stupid and their lives are a mess.
Yes, then that's what's going to happen. Waldo.
55 million people have purchased the book so far. So I guess they're counting on at least some of those people wanting to see Waldo up on the big screen.
A lot of people in the audience look pissed.
It is Tuesday. That means new CDs, DVDs, and TV on DVD is available for your entertainment purchase. Ooh, Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds. Their CD has been released today. Love Part 1 and Part 2 by Angels and Airwaves, also available. Twilight Saga Breaking Dawn Part 1, the soundtrack, featuring various artists like The Joy Formidable, Bruno Mars, and more, is available today. Lost Children by Disturbed and Till the Morning by Keith Sweat, all available today on DVD. The Change Up with Ryan Reynolds and Jason Bateman. See, they make a wish, and then the right. next thing you know, they swap bodies, and they're living Crazy. Each other's lives.
Ridiculous. So the married guy is now single because he thinks that's so much better. The single guy now has the steady relationship he thought he could never achieve.
How's, is the grass really greener on the other side of the fence?
Guess we'll find out.
I think we'll all learn an important lesson about life and love.
Yeah, I can't see where that one's headed.
And 13, starring Jason Statham, Mickey Rourke, and 50 Cent. Never
is
heard
that straight
of this
to DVD?
Film.
I think it might
neither.
Be.
It might be, but interesting cast. TV shows on DVD, Mr. Magoo, the legendary animated Mr. Magoo, the television collection, the animated shorts from 1960 all the way through 1977 now available on DVD. If you've never seen Mr. Magoo, you're not missing much. No, I'm kidding. He was wonderful. He couldn't see things. He had bad eyesight, uh-huh. and that would lead him to a series of misadventures.
Okay, that sounds like it'll hold up.
Today's celebrity birthdays, Bonnie Raitt is 62 years old today, Leif Garrett. Former pop star and a teen icon, 50 years old today. TV chef Gordon Ramsay, 45. Courtney Thorne Smith, from According to Jim, and Ally McBeal turns 44. Parker Posey's 43. Gretchen Mol is 38. Tara Reid from American Pie is 36. Danny Ramirez turns 32 years old. And Jack Osborne celebrates his 26th birthday today. You know, I forgot Jessica Lowndes. I just realized I was handed a note from 90210. She's 23 years old today.
Oh, okay.
So there's another bellworthy young lady celebrating her birthday. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Thank you so much, Ralph. Thank you, Lisa. No thanks to you, Beer Mug.
Oh,
yeah. With another all-new Kevin and Bean show tomorrow. I know what you're thinking. Guys, it's only Tuesday, but I feel like you've already given me 5 days' worth of entertainment in these 2 days that we've had so far.
Yes,
but there's more.
You're welcome, all of you out there.
We are going to actually talk to the guy. We've been very excited since we heard the news. This guy put a petition up online to stop Nickelback from performing at the Detroit Lions Thanksgiving game. He is, as an NFL fan, as a music fan, as a person who can hear, he's very upset with the selection of Nickelback to perform. Nickelback can't catch a break these days, by the way.
Well, they're bad.
I know they are, but they're also enormously popular.
Yes, I know.
So anyway, we're going to talk to him about why he thinks that's such a bad choice. And by the way, I'll also tell you about some of the musical artists who have stepped up and said, hey, I'll come play that game. Just invite me.
I heard also, in order to play the game, they're changing the name from Nickelback to Quarterback.
Ah! No, you did!
Thank
All right,
you.
Also on the program tomorrow, we're going to talk to a guy named Joe Monks. You haven't heard of him before. He is a movie director, but there's something not quite right about him because, oh, I don't know, he's blind.
Yeah. You know, Kevin Smith and I made fun of this guy on our Hollywood Babylon podcast, and then we got in touch with him. We got to know Joe's a little bit, and so Smith ended up funding the remainder of the budget for his film that he made.
No kidding!
Yeah, so we actually we have a little history, me and Mr. Monks.
Also, Wheel of Bad Animal Voices. We didn't have room for it today, but we are, I promise, going to get to it tomorrow. We got a brand new internet roundup for you tomorrow. We have more tickets for the Twilight Red Carpet World Premiere. Tomorrow, we're also going to take phone calls. You don't hear this very often, but we're going to take phone calls from dudes. Who have sent out naked pictures of themselves.
Oh.
What?
Interesting.
There's a story in the news about a guy who sent naked pictures to his mistress who turned right around and sent them to his wife.
Oh.
That's how that ended up for that dude.
Worst mistress ever.
She does seem to fail on every conceivable level there. And I don't think, and we'll talk about this tomorrow, but I don't think girls are begging for naked pictures of their guys either, right?
Yeah, it's not the same.
No,
it's not the same, right.
That's why you turn around and send them to someone else.
Apparently so, yeah. And, of course, finally, and the thing I'm really most excited about is we will have highlights of Dr. Drew and his Life Changer show today because, as you know, he's got an action-packed 1-2 punch. What are the two episodes we're going to see this afternoon, Ralph?
Morbidly obese, women. Sex objects.
Yes.
Right.
Women who get fat for sexy money. Uh-huh. And then, of course, the second episode is Cheater's Court with Judge Drudy.
Judge Drudy. He's going to be Dr. Drew, who you used to at one time love and respect, is going to be he's going to be moderating a discussion between adult film stars who are cheating on one another or something. I'm not sure exactly how that's going to go.
Dressed as a judge sitting in a mock courtroom.
I can't wait. That's all tomorrow right here on an all-new Kevin and Bean.